This is Ray Comfort, and you're listening to the Rational Response Squad.
Warning. This product warps space and time in its vicinity. This show attracts every other piece of matter in the universe with a force proportional to the product of the masses and inversely proportional to the distance between them. The show contains minute electrically charged particles moving at velocities in excess of 500 million miles per hour. Please note, some quantum physics theories suggest that when the consumer is not directly listening to this product, it may cease to exist or will exist only in a vague and undetermined state. We really don't care what you think about us, but if you want to talk to us, send an email to rationalresponsesquad@hotmail.com, and we might engage you in a rational conversation. Irrespective of how much we try, some coincidental coincidence may lead to someone who is like you being discussed in our show. We do not know you, probably, but if we speak about your irrational beliefs and you think we are talking about you, we might have a problem on our hands. So please go away if you cannot laugh at yourself, especially if you are a theist. People who don't want their beliefs laughed at shouldn't have such silly beliefs. Batteries not included. Use only as directed. Do not listen while operating a motor vehicle or heavy equipment. This is not an offer to sell securities. Apply only to affected area. For rectal use only. Do not take orally. Feel free to give us oral. Maybe too intense for some listeners. If condition persists, consult your physician. Breaking seal constitutes acceptance of agreement. As seen on TV, one size fits all. Contains a substantial amount of non-tobacco ingredients. Not affiliated with the American Atheist. Guests have been briefed on some questions before the show. Limited time offer. Pre-recorded for this time zone. Pre-recorded for all time zones. Reproduction is strictly prohibited. Don't quote us on that. Don't quote us on anything. Quote us on everything we get right. We're usually right. All rights reserved. Batteries still not included. Any resemblance to actual persons, living or dead, is unintentional and purely coincidental, except where it isn't. No substitutions allowed. Product is provided as is, without any warranties. User assumes full responsibility. An equal theist defender. If any defects are discovered, do not attempt to fix them yourself. Return to an authorized service center. Listen at your own risk. Explicit lyrics. Yes, explicit lyric. I told you before that batteries aren't included. Maybe too intense for some listeners. This product is meant for educational purposes only. For recreational use only. Not for educational purposes. For entertainment purposes only. Take two of these and call me in the morning. An apple a day keeps the doctor away. Now with new plastic applicator. This radio show made from 100% recycled electrons. This disclaimer is a perfect example of why we need tort reform. Lawyers will sue over anything, and we have to put in long-winded disclaimers to cover our asses. Allergy alert. This show may contain nutmeg, but we doubt it. Oh, we found the batteries. So batteries are now included, but good luck finding them. Caution. This show has caused some laboratory rats to rip through their cages, fly across the room, and brutally murder bloggers who speak negatively of the Rational Response Squad. Visit us at www.rationalresponders.com for more details.
It's Rational Response Squad. About to hit you in your motherfucking face. It's like they keep telling lies. Why they keep telling lies? Jesus never existed, and he's ripping off you guys. You'll read the Jesus puzzle, end of faith, the incredible, shrieking son of man. New testament's a scam, like that phony ass Koran. Get the two around like bands, like that whack ass Benny Hinn, Billy Graham, Pope Ben. They some sick and twisted men. Why they lying to the people, trying to turn them all to sheep? The Bible's simply cruel, all of Nietzsche's shit is deep. With a rational response, we critique the evidence. In 2006, religion has no relevance. Just a sick and twisted dance, trying to take the pain from death. Osama selling virgins, what the fuck do Christians get? An ascetic came to earth just to make you feel like shit. Well, you can't die for me, no, you can't die for me. You'll burn me like a witch, go ahead and cry for me. Cry for me. Yo. And this goes out to Rook Sapien, Scientific Mike. Nothing but free thoughts transmitting through the night. Evolution is the record for the evidence we fight. Richard Dawkins, Robert Price, trying to set the record right. On the mic, flow precise, anti-gospel, anti-Christ, anti-ant culture twice. Fuck right-wingers, archetypes, just a bunch of wicked lies. Selling war, selling spies, school of liberties are disguised. Why they checking out our lives? Why they can download this track? Patriots invasion app, we're just trying to fight back. Rational, and that's a fact. Why they keep telling lies when religion's a disguise? To take the pain from death and to govern all the people. I'm asking you the questions in the Inquisition sequel. Most rational people look beyond the good and evil. Most rational people, we look beyond the good and evil.
Hi, this is Steve Gregg, and you're listening to the so-called Rational Response Squad.
My name is Proclaim once again. Chilling out. Rational Responders, Mike Rook and Sapien, doing big things. Be on the lookout for the upcoming album, Question Everything. You can find it at ProcleanCreations.com. Once again, this is the Rational Response Squad, bringing it to you live and direct.
And welcome to another episode of the Rational Response Squad. I'm your biblical geek, Rook Hawkins.
I am Brian Sapient.
I'm Yellow Number 5.
I'm Richard Carrier.
I'm Kelly.
And we are
the Rational Response Squad.
Today we have a very important show, as a matter of fact. Theism being irrational.
That's our first irrational precept.
It is our first irrational precept, and the most important, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's right. This is like a legacy show. The show will eventually be a free download. And we imagine that anybody who comes to our website and finds that we claim theism is irrational to be ridiculous will download the show and listen in to us defend that position. So, of course, before we go any further, make sure to check out our sponsors, EvolveFish.com and DoubleDough.com. EvolveFish.com, of course, is the home of the Evolved Fish, creators of the Evolved Fish. They have plenty of bumper stickers, t-shirts, books, hats, all sorts of things. They sell Richard Carrier's book, Sense and Goodness Without God.
Both of them.
Well, Richard, actually, you edited.
There as well?
You edited that book?
No, I contributed three chapters.
Contributed three chapters to The Empty Tomb. And that book is available actually through our little Rational Response Squad store. If you go to rationalresponders.com, you can check out the Rational Response Squad store. The bottom left-hand side, click the Atheist Goodies Evolve Fish logo. And you will get taken to a page where you can buy from Evolve Fish and support us at the same time. Join us in the chat room right now at rationalresponders.com, as the same with every Friday night broadcast on Free Thought Media. And without further ado, the way we're going to do this today is Samuel Thomas Poling, one of our newest Rational Response Squad members. He actually earned himself an honorary VIP membership based on his writing this essay. He did most of it, and Tadangst and I worked heavily on it as well. Tadangst gives a lot of suggestions, and I edited it and adapted it for readability on the air here. And so this essay, again, by Samuel Thomas Poling, will be available at rationalresponders.com. It's entitled The Irrationality of Theism. What good does religious belief do for humanity? What does theism bring that a secular view cannot? It is commonly believed that it makes people happy, especially on the deathbed, as well as over it. A preacher once asked me how I, as an atheist, would comfort the parents of a fallen, dead, and buried child, to see them standing over their little girl's grave, then slowly looking up at me with tears in their eyes, looking to me for answers or comfort. He asked me how I would, as a secular humanist, console, banish the grief of, and give hope to a dying old friend during his last moments in his dark hospital room on his deathbed. There are many such famed arguments for theism, rhetorical ploys, appeals to emotions. Some of these arguments do give people some level of comfort to believe in deities, in gods, especially if theism is all they've ever known. As for standings on faith, theists are typically raised as such from their mother's arms. If not, then they are suckered in later with bribes of eternal paradise or frightened with the threats of hell. Some are lured by other lies, false or inconclusive evidence, and fail to apply proper doubt and skepticism. These beliefs become natural to us because we are taught them in our infancy. We are taught dogma before we are able to critically examine them. But then again, why should they doubt the existence of God? It's easier to believe. Isn't it more comforting to believe? Isn't a loving God that will take care of you even after death what you want to be true? Maybe it is. And when a human wants something to be true, they tend to not question it that much. These things can be accepted with only the slightest of evidence or none at all. Some believe emotion can be a substitute for evidence. However, if it's something people don't want to be true, such as death being the very end with no afterlife, they will doubt it until it is raw. Unpleasant things will not be so willingly believed, real or not, proven or not. Whether you want it to be true or not isn't always the answer given by the theist, even if it is the reality of why they believe. Commonly you will hear that it is a faith issue. For some reason, faith is held as a virtue, not only by the pastors, but by God himself. For some reason, God is glorified by blind faith. This so-called all-intelligent, all-knowing, all-powerful, loving God actually wants his greatest creations to surrender their very minds to him without proper evidence of his existence. That is what God calls glory. That is what the church calls glory. They actually consider it a virtue. And it is, by its own merit, the opposite of reason and the abstinence of rationality. People of the religious creeds of the world separate their worlds of reason and faith, faith for their doctrine, reason for everything else. Why is it that all of God's great reality relies on thinking and evidence, whereas he himself is somehow above that? Being the intelligent, loving God that he is, why doesn't he hold reason highest of all? He expects the ultimate, final form of stupidity from his greatest of subjects, and they do it. They surrender their minds to what could not exist in every other aspect of their lives. They can be helpful, loving, intelligent people, but where religion's black, cold hand reaches, and it does indeed reach far into the deeply faithful lives, it continues to sever the ties of reason and put on a highest pedestal sheer idiocy. Where this hand reaches, reason vanishes. After all, reason must vanish. All lights must be put out for someone to believe something is there when it isn't. If the light of reason were to be left on, all would see the reality and there would no longer be religion. So, how does religion continue? It preaches faith. From the cradle to the grave, it preaches faith. It turns out the light wherever it can. The religion that exposes faith as what it really is, stupidity, does not last long. Faith is considered a virtue by the majority of humankind. This isn't so much our fault. Evolution works in baby steps. Human beings are intelligent, but not that intelligent yet. We're getting there, however. Religion is fading. The age of reason is blooming, and the light of truth is growing. The murderous, cold hands of the church are retreating. Their gods shrink with them. And as losers usually do, they are getting angry. I wonder and worry how this cornered beast may lash out. When cornered, the theist usually changes his mind. Suddenly he claims reason is why he is religious. With sincere curiosity, the atheist will ask for reasoning. After all, a loving God may be what the atheist wishes to be true as well. The theist may have some strange new objects found in deserts, tombs found empties, witness testaments, and so forth. Such reasoning and evidence is fine, and I suggest the atheist to encourage it. However, these claims are typically and unfortunately riddled with observer's bias, logical fallacies, and inconclusive sources. For example, the empty tomb argument is odd. They must prove Jesus' body was put in there. They must prove that it was the correct tomb that it was returned to. They must prove it wasn't stolen. And they must prove that all claims are not lies. And witnesses are not liars. Even then, all they would prove is that it was found empty, which would be nothing more than a mystery. Supplying he must have risen from the dead as an explanation would require even further evidence. What if the theist is correct? Another favorite argument is Pascal's wager. If the theist is wrong, then all believers and non-believers simply die and receive the same fate. However, if the theist is correct, then when the believer dies, he gets heaven. And when the non-believer dies, he gets hell. Pascal's wager then states that the logical choice must be belief because you have nothing to lose, only to gain. The theist will warn and threaten the atheist. We believers better be wrong for your sake. The unfortunate truth is that the theist does have something to lose by believing. By their own merit, faith is the surrender of the mind. They believe they know the answer to some of the greatest questions that can be asked, whereas the skeptic is ever searching, thinking, and pondering. The skeptic will make discoveries, the theist will not. The skeptic will think, the theist will not. The skeptic will be mentally free, the theist will not. Pascal's wager has a hidden cost. You must gamble with your mind. The catch is, you lose it, no matter what you gamble your mind with. Faith will snatch it away. It isn't a wager. It's a price. And what is a theist purchasing? What could be more valuable than the ability to use the human mind to wonder the greatest of mysteries? Heaven is what they think they are buying. Eternal paradise. Their fellow men have bribed them without giving them money. They have taken advantage of the young and the foolish. The pastors of the past had acquired themselves serfs. This isn't the goal of the pastors of the present. Usually. For it is just the stupidity of it all that has been kept alive. They bribe their fellow men, thinking it is with wisdom of their ancestors, when it is actually with the greed of their ancestors, the lust of power of their ancestors, and the stupidity of the serfs. But if the theist is right, made up fantasy or not, isn't it still at least a chance at heaven? We do not know a thing about the afterlife. It is just as likely God saves all atheists and damns all theists as it is the other way around. If there is a God, a creator of a universe filled with reason, then I would actually expect it to be more likely for this God to prefer the atheist, the rational, over the faithful and willing fools. But if there is such a rational God, I doubt he'd damn even the theist. No rational God would be as childish as to invent a hell. What good is Pascal's wager then? You are purchasing, if anything, a greater chance at hell for the definite cost of your mind. Are you willing to pay? Don't pay. If you want to believe in God, don't let it be out of fear. Don't give in to bribe either. Hold reason high. I admit the human reason isn't much as of today. It isn't strong enough to do anything instantly. Reason takes time at everything. Reason is also very fragile. Emotion, desire, rage, and lies can trash it to death. It is a weak thing to rely on, but it is the only thing to rely on. Reason does not stand the chance we wish it would, but it is the only thing that stands at all. Don't give it up for anything, not for fear or hope, not for love or hate, not for house or horse. No matter how beautiful it may be, nothing is as beautiful, nothing as wondrous, nothing as miraculous as the human mind. There is no God, heaven, hell, or world worth the price of reason. If there is a God who disagrees with that, then he is no God of mine. Theism enjoys a myth of a devil, a demon that comes and tricks you into turning from God, giving up a magical center core for some tempting prize, and then ruins the rest of your life and even after. There is a devil. I'll give the theist that much. However, the irony of it is that religion is that very devil. Heaven is the prize it tempts you with. Reason is the God it turns you from. And that magical center of yours, that soul of yours, that utmost important thing you can ever possess is your mind. Religion is tempting. What can be more tempting than eternal paradise in a heaven? Now, without any evidence that it will be delivered, will you make that deal with Pascal? What is your reason worth to you? What is the ability to wonder the greatest mysteries of the universe worth to you? There is a devil who seeks your very soul. He doesn't live in casinos. He is very clever. What he seeks to take from you, the foolish, is much more valuable than money. Perhaps God does exist, and he is exactly as the Bible portrays him. And when you die, if you are an atheist, you will be damned to hell. Would it pay to be an atheist then? Well, as a further and final refute to Pascal's bullshit, I say yes, it does pay to be an atheist then. If there is a God who will damn a human being who has the courage and intelligence to think and doubt, then he most definitely, as I said, is no God of mine. It is no God of any thinking man. Heaven will be a place of fools and cowards. Hell will be the land of the intelligent and the brave. Where would you rather go? Will you live among the chosen of the most evil spirits in existence? Or will you burn among all the very best of his creations? Define torture to me. Is it fire or is it mental slavery? I suppose reality is training and breeding grounds for the slave. Heaven is the work field and hell is the rejection. Do you still love God? Sorry. I was born with a shred of courage and love for freedom. I don't love this God. I hate this God. I love courage, freedom, and reason. I have a severe disdain for the opposites of it. Fear, servitude, and faith or stupidity. As Luigi Cascioli said on our show, faith is the truth of imbeciles. So why believe? Unless suffering is something that is okay with you, fear is your friend, servitude your joy, and stupidity the outcome of your mind, why do you believe? Relax. God wouldn't bless so many of us with intelligence if he meant us to be serfs. If there is a God, he wouldn't mean for us to be creatures of faith. Religion and theism are looking rather irrational, and they will remain so until God is proven. It is a negative thing to be a theist all around. Good cannot be the result of stupidity. Putting on a blindfold is not a logical or helpful choice. However, there is still the argument that it comforts you. If the blindfold was off, you would see that a God is not proven and that it is likely that death is the end of ends. That isn't very comforting, is it? So wearing the blindfold does one thing well. It comforts the living and especially the dying. Or does it? The theist knows they do not know the answer to the God or afterlife questions. So when they claim they know God or his will, or when they speak in his name, they are lying. To not know God and to say you do is meeting the definition of lying. Even though they are ignorant of whether or not there is actually a God, they are lying because they say they actually know there is one when they do not. It is possible someone out there definitely knows the answer, and I urge them to come forward with their reasoning and evidence, but until then, we do not know. The lying theists who do not know the truth one way or the other claim to. Lying is a sin. So to be the best Christian, you cannot be a Christian at all. But how then are they comforted? Pretending to know the answer isn't making it any more likely. How does it comfort them? It doesn't. They're lying about that too. Not just to those around them, but to themselves. They want to trick their own minds. If you chant it enough, you'll believe it. If you go to church enough with so many other people who believe it, you'll further convince yourself, won't you? You'll throw dirt over reason, trying to hide it from yourself. There will be a constant inner struggle for the rest of your life. Are you comforted in knowing that you are lying to yourself? So the child is born. Soon he is old enough to start making out what his parents are saying. They tell him about God, the afterlife, heaven and hell, morality and sin, Jesus and Satan. The child trusts his parents. After all, the child that doesn't trust his parents blindly usually doesn't last very long. Children can't be skeptical yet. They're too young. Cars would hit them. Snakes would bite them. But other than all the important things the child learns, the child hears from his parents' lips, a lie. The lie the parents tell themselves. They want it to be true so desperately they need more people around them to join in their faith to help validate it. Hearing them tell their children about God and explain him away is an attempt at the parent to comfort him or herself. The child believes, at the formidable years of childhood, the child listens to this hogwash. Then this child gets older. Skepticism peaks out. As the knowledge of our world increases, the doubt does as well. Soon the Easter Bunny and Santa Claus vanish from the child's belief systems. Most likely, however, the growing intelligence won't break the chains of the religious belief, but it will try. As the boy follows his parents through the store, battles will begin to wage inside of his skull. Is there really a God in heaven? But such thoughts are scary to a child. As a matter of fact, not many thoughts scare people more than the thought of death being the very end. There is nothing more frightening other than hell, which will also play a part. Asking that very question, even only inside of his own head, the boy will tremble with fear. After all, God is all-powerful, and he can hear your thoughts, your doubts. Do you want to go to hell forever when you die, child? How dare you question? With horror and frustration, the lad struggles not to think those doubting words again. But how can you not think those words? In order to know which words not to think, you'll have to think them, won't you? Just say it. Just say it. Scream it. I doubt God. No, no, you can't say it. God is right there, waiting to throw the ultimate horror at you. Don't say it. Don't think it. And so the child chants inside of his own head. After all, it is the only chance he has not to think these words. He says, I love God. I love Jesus. I love God. I love Jesus. I love God. Sooner or later, the child will forget the subject and think about something else. Until later, when the whole thing happens again. This happened to many of us at the Rational Response Squad when we were young. This is what our childhood was. For the most part, we kept it to ourselves. After all, why would our parents lie to us? They love us. They wouldn't do that. Or would they? Maybe they've been lied to by their parents, and they just don't have the guts to admit it. It's hard to admit that your parents didn't care enough about you to teach you only what they knew existed in reality. It's hard to admit your parents don't have enough care for you to teach you only what they could philosophically defend. So the child grows older into a teenager. He'll learn some arguments for God's existence and attach to them with hardly any questioning. Maybe the child may hear the fallacious watchmaker argument. However, when you learn and study evolution, you realize there are explanations for how things become so complex, and no God is utilized in the process. Natural selection will ultimately create something complex that works. No intelligent design necessary. If an animal is born with slightly worse genetics, that animal won't likely live long enough to pass them on to the next generation, whereas the animal with slightly superior genetics will have a better chance of passing those on. So by dying or living reality without the slightest intelligence, choosing better genetic plans and codes that get passed on, slowly advance to what is considered to be, today, the most complex known thing in the universe, the human mind. The watchmaker argument states that when you find a watch on the ground with all its complex working parts, you assume it was created by someone with intelligence, and that you can make the same conclusion if you look at something as complex as an animal. Therefore, there must be an intelligent creator of all life, right? Well, the problem with this argument is that even if you found that watch and assumed it was created by an intelligent creator, you'd be wrong. And as such, you'd be wrong if you found an animal and assumed it had an intelligent creator. Find a watch. Go searching for the watchmaker. See what you find. Someone merely composed the parts of the watch together using plans that were also pieced together throughout the centuries of humanity. Go looking deeper and deeper. Find the watchmaker. Where do those parts come from? Where are the initial plans? You'll find there are hundreds, thousands, millions of humans involved over the ages in advancing the current watch design. You'll go all the way back to the sundial, discovered because of the way of the sun and the shadow. Natural phenomena is the watchmaker. Humans use that natural phenomena and then work together over the ages to evolve their watch design. Human thinking itself evolved using natural phenomena. Life challenged itself, killed off the weak, and left the strong to get stronger. It was a process of many intelligences, many forces, all with their own process into becoming. It's funny how the watchmaker argument in this sense is actually more proof of evolution than a god. You just have to question. Don't accept anything with blind faith. One of the dirtiest and disgusting phrases I know. What about the natural forces? They are complex. Surely a god created them. Perhaps someday we'll be able to dissect the laws of physics the way we can a watch or the origins of species. Let us not pretend to know an answer, let alone be satisfied with it. Guessing is not truth. Just because it is the only thing you can think doesn't mean it is correct. The correct answer is the truth. I don't know. The atheist will say this. The theist will not. The theist will lie. The theist will pretend to know and stop looking for the truth. And without much regard for intelligence, the teenager will hold this argument high and try to use it against the occasional doubt that pops into his mind. If he does not become intelligent and brave, then he will never be free from the falsehood. And I must stress that courage must match the intelligence. All the intelligence in the universe won't get further than the lack of it, unless it is carried forth without fear and prejudice. Fear is the problem the intelligent theist must overcome. Most do not. The teenager will become a man. He may go to church and preach his convictions with other fools to empower his cowardice and stupidity. He may decide that God is more important than man and love the unproven deity over his own neighbor. His own freedoms will be sacrificed for nothing, and he will attempt to remove those same freedoms from his fellow men in the name of what he doesn't even know to exist. If he is truly faithful, he knows a little suffering here on earth won't compare to what will happen to those poor heretics in the hereafter. His nation he will try to drag back to God. Wars will be fought, lives will be lost, powers will be flown into, all for the same kind of faith. If you live it, and live it with so many others, it must be true. That'll silence the doubt. That'll quench your fear and cowardice. If it is blood that satisfies terror of death's thirst, then it must be blood. But things aren't always to such an extreme. Mankind is evolving. Those who are religious are not as much as they were in the older days. Sure, they still seek to take away harmless human rights for the sake of what they don't know to even exist. Sure, they sacrifice what they know to exist for what they don't know to exist. Sure, it affects many aspects of their already too short lives. But at least they are not burning anyone anymore, for the most part. This is allowing more atheists to exist, and they are now increasing in number. People are starting to love people instead of gods. Of course, there are still extremists out there, but they are diminishing. The man will live his life out, wasting much of it for literally nothing at all. He may have children. He will kneel before them and read to them from the good book, to be sure their minds and lives are as infected as his. Then someday, he will find himself on his deathbed, surrounded by his family. Words of the afterlife will be shared. God and his glory will be passed around as everyone in the room, for the last time together, continues the lie they so desperately must keep. And with this struggle, this falsehood, this lie in his mind, this man's brain will die off. Desperate, pathetic irrationality is the last thing his head will hold, and that will be the end. His last moments, nothing more than given up for absolutely nothing, like most of his life was. His family will mourn, but keep the lie alive in their hearts and mouths, the lie they told themselves for so long, for their whole lives, to help them in their time of grief, will be told again in this final act. Stealing the reality away from this last moment he has on earth is that metaphorical devil I spoke of. Instead of embracing all of the good times shared together, holding what we know to be true in highest regard, the usual theist will ponder the better place that he will be going to. In this final act, reason will get shoved under a blanket again, so this one last lie can be muttered, and they're gone, forever. All the minutes lost talking about unproven lies will never come back, nor will all the years lost talking about them and God beforehand. The devil has taken his dues. Nothing could add to the horror of hell except the presence of its creator, as Robert G. Ingersoll once said, but the true horror is what happens in reality due to religion. Countless men and women have died or have had their lives thrashed and minds lost thanks to faith. And true to the fact that I love the human mind more than anything else in existence, I greatly detest religion for what it does to it. While I have life as long as I draw breath, I shall deny with all my strength and hate with every drop of my blood this infinite lie. So be it. I was once asked by a preacher how I would comfort parents as they stood over the grave of their dead little girl. What I would say to them when they look up at me with their watery eyes. Would I lie to them? The fact that a reality is unpleasant doesn't give us a justification to create fantasies about it. if I greatly desire a parachute to be on my back as I fall from a skyscraper when there is one, it doesn't justify me actually believing there is. We should hold to beliefs for reasons, not for the comfort it allegedly brings. We all have to die someday. Maybe there is an afterlife, but believing in it is foolish, pathetic, unjustified, and a waste of thinking. Hoping for it is all we can do. Lying about it will not respect the parents or their daughter. We should speak of the good times. We should love what we know about her, not the unknown fantasies she might now belong to. I was once asked by a preacher how I would comfort an old dying friend as he lay in his deathbed in a dark hospital room with only me beside him. How could I ever comfort a man when he is at the scariest moment of his entire life? I'm not sure. It would be a hard thing for me to speak at all, but I am sure as hell of one thing. I won't waste my last chance. There is no lie grand enough to trade a moment of honesty and love for. It's up to you to embrace reality and not the irrationality of theism whenever possible. We can no longer allow what we don't know to be true steal away from us the only life we're sure we get. The end.
Yeah.
That kicked ass.
That was pretty good. Long-winded. Very, very,
very
good.
Long-winded, yes. Yeah. Thomas Paine.
Yes, it yeah. Definitely was Thomas Paine.
Okay, so yeah, again, that piece was by Samuel Thomas Pauling. And I mean, the show is really important to us because it lays out the case for the irrationality of theism. And we really wanted to get the views of our audience involved as well. I thought it was really cool that we asked our audience to submit views on why they thought theism was irrational. And they really had just like the gamut of responses. We've got all sorts of reasons why theism is irrational. So, Mike, I believe you have these in a printed list that we're going to go over some of the best points.
So many people wrote in, and there were so many great essays written. And we are certainly going to save them, and we'll have them on our site, you know, for preserved for posterity. But what I did, I went through and I just took some excerpts from some of the better essays. And, you know, I just like to share some of the different thoughts that people had on our forums that took the time and effort to write into us. So, like I said, just a couple of excerpts here. Well, actually, quite a few. But like I said, there were so many essays. So we start off with, theism is irrational because it depends on theistic faith. Belief with no evidence. Belief with no evidence is irrational because it leads to disagreement rather than agreement. And rational discussion cannot progress without agreement. If 100 people base a belief on faith, you will get 100 disagreeing answers to a question. But if the same people base a belief on evidence, given sufficient evidence, they will arrive at agreement with the same answer. Belief without evidence is irrational because it has no use. It is not able to help us make reliable predictions, which is the basis of all reason. Thus, theistic faith is irrational. And that was written in by Natural. And Todd Inks followed up with that. He agrees with Natural, and he adds, to follow along with what Natural said, faith is belief based on desire, period. Theistic faith is not an epistemological position. It's rejection of epistemology itself. It's the claim that one can hold to a belief without any reason. The desire to hold to such beliefs are inculcated into us before we are even capable of going to the bathroom on our own. To learn to question what we have been told is to step into adulthood.
The definition of an irrational is not consistent with or using reason. And, you know, the claim there he mentioned, I think it was Natural, that you could ask 100 people to explain something based on faith and they'll all come up with a different answer.
Right.
I mean, that goes right to the heart of what irrational is, which is, you know, not using reason. You know, if you don't have evidence for a claim, I mean, basically just spelled out the definition of irrational in another way, except embracing theism in its point. And I think it's funny because you and I talked many times about how
God is like a snowflake.
That is exactly it. And I take credit for this. God is like a snowflake. No two gods are the same. And that goes for every single theist I have ever met. Right. Nobody has the same interpretation of God. Even if you went to a church where they were all taught the same God, you walk out and you interview all 300 people. And this is a scientific study that you and I plan on doing together at some point, where we will survey, you know, members of the same parish and show you how everybody from the same church has a different interpretation of what God is. And they all, in effect, believe in a different God, which goes right to the heart of what Natural's saying, that if you ask 100 people, you know, to give you something based on faith, they'll all come up with a different answer.
Right. Because it, like, you know, like we were saying, it's belief based on desire. It's essentially whatever you want to believe, you know.
Exactly. You believe. Yeah. Yes.
So, and it has no basis in reality. Moving on to another point, Darwin 5223 writes in, this is, you know, kind of a interesting story that he was relating. So I asked her, this is his mother. So I asked her, if Charles Manson were to accept Jesus Christ as a savior, would he gain entrance into heaven? Yes, she answered. I was floored. So I said, let me get this straight. If I brokered world peace, but didn't accept Christ as my savior, then I would go to hell. But if Charles Manson accepts Christ into his heart, then he'll go to heaven? Again, she answered, yes. This is why theism is irrational. It may be worth nothing that she later became the leader of a female gang in Texas and is now a recovering drug addict. My sister's other daughter had two children out of wedlock, and her son is now addicted to meth. Speaking for myself, I feel I don't need to be kept in line under the threat of punishment from some higher being. I'm a good person and always try to do the right thing simply because it's the right thing to do. Christians and other proselytizing religions help their fellow man not to do good for good's sake, but in order to convert people to their religion. So atheists are undoubtedly more moral than Christians. That's another point that, you know, we make all the time. You know, if a lot of people will say that morality comes from God or from belief in God, but essentially, if the only reason you're doing good is because you're under threat of some kind of hell, you're not really being moral. You know, if I put a gun to your head and told you to do something, you know, that's not of your own volition. Basically, you know, what you're really saying is that if I didn't believe in this hell, there would be nothing at all to stop me from raping, pillaging, plundering, murdering at will. If that's the only thing that's keeping you from doing that, by all means, please, go on believing in God. Go on believing in hell. Because if that's the only reason that you're a good person and do good things, then, I mean, that's pure insanity to
me. Well, the irony is that they selectively are choosing what parts of reality to give credence to, and to not realize that murdering, raping, and pillaging would land you in a jail cell is simply ignorant or dishonest with yourself. You know, the reason why, you know, yeah, people do things, you know, in part because they choose to be good. Fine. Okay. That's why I do things. But God isn't what stops us from murdering people. Okay. Justice is. All right. That's, you know, in this country, if you murder somebody, if you get caught, you get thrown in jail. All right. So the argument that it's God that's really doing that is, to me, it's ridiculous. And I hear a lot of Christians use that argument. It just doesn't make any sense at all. It's,
well, I think it also ignores the fact that to be a good person, you actually have to have a good character. I mean, if you were a good person, you wouldn't want to rape, murder, pillage, or whatever. And that's what it means to be a good person. So if it doesn't even make any sense to say that you can become a good person under threat, like you said, that basically is saying that you're not a good person, you're a totally evil person, and you basically have to be locked up, you know, yeah, to prevent, you know, locked up or lied to prevent you from doing all this horrible havoc on the world. And so that's really comes to a question of why should you develop yourself into a good person so that you don't want to do bad things and you want to do good things for people? And this whole idea of heaven and hell doesn't really work to transform character that way. And I mean, the evidence of Christianity demonstrates that.
This thought goes at almost like the heart of your book, which is Sense and Goodness Without God.
Right.
If you hadn't heard that book's available at Evolve Fish, but give me a correlation, a link to that book. I mean, what do you say as to why people should be good people without God?
Well, it's related to what you were saying. You're talking about the last ditch protection that society,
yeah,
has.
Exactly. I want people to be good because they want to be good, and I am, but exactly, the justice system is the last ditch,
yeah,
and not
the,
God.
The personal reality is, and this really, this is what all the ancient philosophers said, is that if you want to be a happy person, I mean, if you want to have any chance of acquiring a significant amount of happiness in your life, I mean, it doesn't have to be like perfect happiness, but more happiness overall, more chance of happiness than misery, being a good person, you know, conducting yourself with moral character, is going to realize that. And I demonstrate this in many ways in my book. And for example, I mean, just to take a really extreme example, but this exemplifies the whole point, is if you're an asshole, you're not going to have any real friends. Whereas if you're a nice person, you are going to have real friends. Now, who's going to be happier? Who's going to be the lonely, disappointed, complaining curmudgeon who's disappointed with life, who's basically miserable and has to basically try to recover some sort of pleasures in superficial ways, or the person who has real, genuine friends and can kick around and just enjoy their company and be able to rely on them and so on? That person who has the genuine friends is going to be better off in life more often, and they're going to have less disappointment, less misery, and so on. So it's a question of degrees as to how you set up your life. And that's just one example. There's many ways in which your behavior and even your attitude affects how disappointed you are with life, how disappointed you are with yourself, how happy you are, how content you are. And when you analyze it all out, it's cultivating compassion and honesty, a passionate value for those things, are the values that are going to realize the best life for yourself. And it's the same kind of thing where you're interested in being a content, happy person. So you are serving your own self-interest in that sense, but it can only be achieved by genuinely caring about how other people feel around you, by genuinely caring about whether something you say is true or false. And that really is what matters as far as good and evil and what's right and what's wrong.
Can you give a reason for people to genuinely care? How does somebody do that without God?
Empathy.
Well, that's the thing, is that God, believing in God doesn't make you care about other people.
Well, but I'm using the theist argument.
Yeah, but exactly. but it's contrary to fact. And that brings up the whole issue of irrationality, is that they're basically advocating a psychological theory that has been soundly refuted. It's factually untrue that you can, under threat like that, or because of merely imposing a God belief on someone, that suddenly they're going to be a compassionate, honest person, genuinely compassionate, honest person. That's not reality. I mean, the psychological reality is these are habits that have to be developed in you and cultivated through a long period of understanding and coming to realize how your actions affect other people, and coming to realize, be able to put yourself in someone else's shoes, in a sense. And for example, Piaget is one of the psychologists who studied the development of moral development in children. And that he shows several different stages where the minimal, most immature stage is you only do good under threat or reward. But the higher stages are when you become aware of the feelings of others and are able to put yourself in their shoes. And as a result, you sympathize with them in the same way that you sympathize with yourself. You see yourself in other people. And that is what happens at the level of maturity. So and that just happens naturally as a natural psychological fact.
Right.
It's not connected to God belief or anything like that. And so the actual facts, scientific facts of psychology show that moral development happens in a way that has nothing to do with God belief or hell belief or heaven belief or
right.
any of that. So when Christians say that you have to believe in God, they're basically advocating pseudo-psychology. It's like saying that despite all the evidence, it's the sun that actually revolves around the earth. You know,
in essence, it's just more irrationality.
Fact. Right, yeah.
You're using irrationality to justify irrationality.
Yeah.
So did you have thoughts that you prepared knowing that we were going to do a show on the irrationality of theism? Did you have anything in mind
something? Well, I had some things. I mean, normally in a discussion like this, I would immediately ask for a definition of irrationality. That's where we would start. And you gave that, actually.
Yeah, I did. And you know what? It's funny because Chaos Lord submitted to me that some things can be irrational, and that irrational is a rhetorical argument. He understood the difference between the irrationality that we were using and the irrationality that, you know, is acceptable.
Yeah. Well, there's colloquial different senses of irrationality. I mean, there's irrationality where someone is completely incoherent and babbling. I mean, that's, you know, the completely insane person.
Everything's ungodly! Dark-sided! I've given up to God! I'm a God warrior! And I don't want someone with tainted anything it believes doing anything with my family!
That's irrational behavior, whereas someone who has an irrational belief but otherwise conducts themselves consistently and you know, they perceive their environment and so forth.
Right.
So those are two different kinds of irrationality. And then, like you said, your idea of what we're talking about irrationality here is simply not consistent with reason.
Right. Unreasonable would be another way to describe it.
Yeah, exactly. So, but some people will say, well, it's irrational to pursue something because you love it. Like, say you want to do rock climbing, and you say that's irrational. There's no rational reason to want to do that. But and it's not inconsistent with reason to realize things that are going to enhance your life and you're going to enjoy out of life. So it might be non-rational in the sense that you're doing it for an emotional reason, but it's not inconsistent with reason to pursue that, as long as you pursue it, you know, intelligently and rationally in the way you conduct yourself.
I want to be careful to let the listener know that when we say that theism is irrational, we're not saying that theists are irrational in all walks of life. Theists are irrational directly pertaining to their God belief. It is very possible that every one of us in this room is irrational about something. But there's a big difference about being irrational about what time you take a shower, okay, as opposed to being irrational to giving the church 10% of your money for your life, an organization which, in my opinion, is the most evil organization to ever grace the face of the planet, has caused more damage, harm, and corruption, especially to the human mind, than any other organization that the world has ever known. So some theists will say, well, you guys are irrational too. Sure, sure. But, you know, tell me how I'm as irrational as you believing in invisible men, okay, who you give 10% of your income to so that more men can preach about the invisible men and so that wars can be fought over the invisible man, okay? So.
Yeah, that's right. Degrees of irrationality and domains of irrationality are two other issues to distinguish. Yeah,
And since this is one of these important shows where a lot of people be downloading, you know, the Rational Response Squad does not mean that we are always rational. It means that we can respond to irrational claims rationally. And your God is irrational, okay? Belief in your God is irrational. And what you are getting today is a rational response to it. And with that, let's move on to, another point, Mike, or did you want to say
something? Well, just as far as where morality comes from, for me, it basically can be summed up in two words, empathy and reciprocity.
Those are actually formal terms in the field of moral psychology.
So, I didn't even know that. But I mean, just, you know, from an evolutionary point of view, you can see that it's just basically ingrained in us to be this way. You look at, you know, our closest relatives, you look at primates, you know, gibbons and chimps and things like that. You can see elements of empathy, reciprocal altruism in them. And it's, you know, in us as well. So.
Yep. In the chat room, and for those of you who don't know, maybe we'll do this again in the future, but we've been utilizing the Stickcam service with a webcam, and maybe we'll do it in the future broadcast where you can actually watch us broadcast our show. Of course, the show will get aired in upcoming weeks, and there are people commenting on the dialogue right now, and I thought that it was interesting. Back with what I said a moment ago, Natural said that, you know, here's how he puts it in reference to being irrational. He says, I don't care if you're irrational as long as your moral actions are all based on rationality. Of course, I would take it a little step further. You'd have to consider
moral principles
that,
as well. Have yeah. To be based on rational constructions.
And that giving money to the church, for example, would be immoral. So, you know, whereas most people wouldn't say that's a moral action, that has nothing to do with being moral. And then somebody else, commented that, a rationality that doesn't leave your private quarters doesn't concern anyone but yourself. That was actually, apples for Adam. So, and agreed, but then some people have God belief that, you know, resides in their own private quarters. And, I don't know if his point is that people can teach your children this irrationality, but if they're doing that inside their own home, I don't condone that either.
No, that's a good point. This rationality really stems from your upbringing. I mean,
Tradition is the biggest reason that, you know, religion continues to exist.
Well, I think George Smith put it eloquently when he said, you know, it's all a matter of reasonability, and you have to be taught that. You're not born with that. So in order for someone to actually reason what we're even saying, if they don't have a stem or some sort of, you know, upbringing in reasonability, they can't reason out what's so illogical or rational about what's going on in their lives. So we have to sort of help that a little bit. And I think it's what we're here for, you know, to help teach people how to reason. Because some people are just so blinded by what they're taught that there's nothing we're saying is making any sense to them. It's just dribble.
Well, it's the whole thing, like fallacies. Yeah. There's a lot of people.
And I apologize for that, by the way, if we are coming off a little bit above your head. But, you know, really, take some time to research, you know, God belief and where it came from and why you believe, and think about it long and hard. Because,
or even more fundamentally, like he's saying, that a lot of people regularly engage in fallacious modes of reasoning, assuming that a certain fallacy is actually a sound way of reasoning.
Exactly. Rook is saying that they don't even know what fallacious and reasoning means.
Exactly. But what's more important is they have to understand, it's difficult to get them to understand why a particular mode of reasoning is fallacious, right. Why it doesn't actually, isn't correct reasoning,
because it makes
why it's irrational.
It's unfortunate because, you know, we do our best to make things as logical and rational as possible, but someone on the other side of the spectrum is looking at us going, what? You know,
or something stupid like, you know, using that fallacious reasoning, like, well, if you only searched for God, you'd find him, or
exactly.
You know,
or everybody else is a Christian.
Yeah, right, exactly. With appeal to popularity.
And, right. And well, that's also another one of our rational precepts, which we're going to eventually get to, is that logicians use logic to limit people's arguments.
Right. Yeah. Like
that.
You know,
I'm sure
you've
actually seen that
years. And, you know, like, we'll say, like, well, you know, that's a poor argument, that's, you know, a fallacy of whatever,
and like,
and they're like, yeah, but you didn't address my point. I'm like, well, that's because you haven't made a point.
But it's not even that people don't know what these words or terms mean, as much as they don't even know they wouldn't even begin to understand where to use them. I mean, in their normal daily life, they're going about their daily lives as what's evident around them, plus one would be their God. So, I mean, they're not going around saying, you know, man, what's reasonable about this? They don't even know how to reason. They couldn't even come to the conclusion based on a reasonable process because they're not even sure how to get there. So I think it's really up to us to sit here and say, hey, look, all right, if X doesn't equal X, there's a problem. You know, I mean, or whatever theorem you want to use, you know, to come to that conclusion. I mean, we don't usually sit there and do mathematics in our heads. You know, it's not like that. It's more like, you know, wait a second, what else do I believe in my life that has no evidence? You know, what else do we do in our lives that takes time out of our daily schedules, or what we could be spending time, you know, curing cancer or putting our money towards, you know, legitimate organizations that help children and don't take a percentage out for themselves to build up a church? You know, these are irrational things. You know, I mean, these are things that we have to sit there and ask ourselves if this is rational. And how we do that is through reason. And I think that's something we really need to start focusing right. on, too.
Check it out, folks. Kelly, our newest squad member here, is a great addition to the show. She is currently majoring in psychology, minoring in philosophy. We're so glad to have her with us. And she's going to go ahead and read some more views from the community. So take it away, Kel.
Okay. An essay. I can sum it up in one word. One word. Leviticus. It just seems so ridiculous to me that some omnipotent God with infinite power and knowledge would care about whether or not I eat something with a cloven hoof. That was submitted by Hierophant.
Or what about the pleasing aromas that God loves? Right. He loves the scent of dead
loves
carcasses.
This, yeah, loves the smell of
burning
flesh.
Burning carcasses, right?
But, and yeah, I think Brian was making up in the essay too. You know, what sort of rational, intelligent being cares about such things? You know, it doesn't make any sense.
Now, speaking of Leviticus, and with Kelly here, it reminds me that it says that if a woman dresses like a man, so she wears pants, in other words, she is an abomination before the Lord.
Kelly, you're an abomination
before the Lord.
Now, we're going to have to take you out on the back and stone you, but that's only after we get you in front of a tribunal.
Well, unfortunately, I'm not a virgin, so I don't know if God will like my sacrifice as much.
Oh.
We might have to sacrifice somebody in my stead.
He'll be very upset, yes.
Are there any virgins left?
Not in this room. There is
but no, that is so true, that anyone who believes that the Bible was inspired by an almighty God, and that an almighty God is actually going to be offended by how a woman dresses, this supposedly supremely wise, supremely intelligent God is supposed to inspire a text where that says he's actually offended by whether a woman wears pants. I mean, that's just, that in itself is irrational, I think.
I say not just pants, but if you wear clothing that's mixed from two different types of cloth, right. That's right. Also offensive to
God.
If
your haircut's not right, then you're dead, too.
Yeah, you cannot cut those sideburns. God hates that.
Oh, he loved Elvis, man. He's a big Elvis fan. And that's why he's still alive, because Elvis didn't really die. He was ascended into heaven and then returned back to Earth a few days later.
I've had this discussion before with some people.
Was it about Elvis?
Well, yeah, no, about Elvis. Like, in 2,000 years, it's going to be, like, I there's no doubt in my mind, if religion survives for another 2,000 years, Elvis is going to be the new Jesus.
Hey, he was the king, man. He was the king.
He was the king.
He was the king of the rock.
He's the king of the rock, not the king of the Jews.
Do you remember the Dr. Lahr article we reviewed back a few episodes ago?
Actually, buddy.
The article to Dr. Lahr reviewed a few weeks ago, and it really speaks to the heart of what you guys are just saying about abominations. And a letter was written to Dr. Lahr. Thank you for doing so much to educate people regarding God's law. I have learned a great deal from your show and try to share that knowledge with as many people as I can. When someone tries to defend the homosexual lifestyle, for example, I simply remind them that Leviticus 18:22 clearly states it to be an abomination. End of debate. I do need some advice, though, from you, however, regarding some of the other specific laws and how to follow them. When I burn a bull on the altar as a sacrifice, I know it creates a pleasing odor for the Lord, as stated in Leviticus 1:9. The problem is my neighbors. They claim the odor is not pleasing to them. Should I smite them?
But that is a pleasing barbecue. Smells great.
I would like to sell my daughter into slavery as sanctioned in Exodus 21:7. In this day and age, what do you think would be a fair price for her?
I would say a tittle.
That's right. Hey, little Steve's listening, and this is in your Bible. For you Christians who believe that the Old Testament needs to be thrown out, think to yourself, okay? Why would an all-knowing God create a book that would need to be changed? He's perfect, okay? He's supposed to be perfect. So in other words, if he came to fix a rule, okay, he's imperfect, all right? If he had to come down to fix a rule that he created, he's no longer perfect and therefore doesn't exist. So the Old Testament must still be accurate, and if that's the case, then these questions for Dr. Lahr are very important. Matthew 5:17-19, Jesus said, "Think not that I am come to destroy the law or the prophets. I am not come to destroy, but to fulfill." Okay? Jesus did not come to destroy the law, and therefore these laws are very important. I'm going to go on. I know that I am allowed no contact with a woman while she is in her period of menstrual uncleanliness, as stated in Leviticus 15:19-24.
You're screwed.
The problem is, how do I tell? I've tried asking, but most women take offense.
You know what's funny, guys? No, what I think is funny about this, though? That in the Bible, if you don't follow these lesser commandments, you don't go to heaven?
I don't find that funny at all, man. That means I'm not going to heaven.
What I do find hilarious, you know, you'll get somebody like Fred Phelps who will cite Leviticus on homosexuals. But does Fred Phelps, does he not eat shellfish? You know, does he not eat things from a cloven hoof? You know,
hot dogs?
Yeah.
Bacon?
Exactly. You know, I have no doubt that Phelps loves hot dogs.
You know what? For a second, I thought you said he was going to love the cock.
Well, I have no
I really honestly, thought you were going to say that. Like,
honestly, I have no doubt that Fred Phelps loves the cock as well. If there's ever been like a closet case self-loathing homosexual, it's Fred Phelps. Hands down.
Yeah.
You can cover both bases with saying that he loves hot wieners.
That was a good combination of the words. But are they Franks or Joes?
As stated in Leviticus 25:44, I may indeed possess slaves, both male and female, provided they are purchased from neighboring nations. A friend of mine claims that this applies to Mexicans, but not Canadians. Can you clarify why can't I own Canadians?
Because they say a lot, eh?
I have a neighbor who insists on working on the Sabbath. Exodus 35:2 clearly states that he should be put to death. Am I morally obligated to kill him myself? A friend of mine feels that even though eating shellfish is an abomination, as stated in Leviticus 11:10, it is a lesser abomination than homosexuality. I don't agree. Can you settle this? Of course, Leviticus 21:20 states that I may not approach the altar of God if I have a defect in my sight. I have to admit that I wear reading glasses. Does my vision have to be 20/20, or is there a little wiggle room here? Most of my male friends, they get their hair trimmed, including the hair around their temples, even though this is expressly forbidden by Leviticus 19:27. How should they die?
Wow.
Of course, I know from Leviticus 11:6-8 that touching the skin of a dead pig makes me unclean, but may I still play football if I wear gloves? It kind of reminds me of all the football players that like put their finger up to the sky after they've gotten a touchdown, right?
Thanks for that touchdown, Jesus.
Thanks for that touchdown, Jesus. Really, they're like, got you again, Jesus. Touch that dead pig. My uncle has a farm. He violates Leviticus 19:19 by planting two different crops in the same field, as does his wife, by wearing garments made of two different kinds of thread, cotton and polyester blend. He also tends to curse and blaspheme a lot. Is it really necessary that we go to all the trouble of getting the whole town together to stone them, as stated in Leviticus 24:10-16? Couldn't we just burn them to death at a private family affair like we do with people who sleep with their in-laws, as stated in Leviticus 20:14? I know you have studied these things extensively, Dr. Lara, so I am confident that you can help. Thank you again for reminding us that God's word is eternal and unchanging.
Yes, lots of evidence of irrationality there.
That, of course, is at our message boards at rationalresponders.com in our Hamaruki's Irrational Precepts, named after my boy over here, Rook.
Arr.
If you haven't figured it out, that is a little take on Hammurabi's laws. They are Hamaruki's Irrational Precepts.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So what do we got next? What's there, next? Kelly? We got more more statements from our community as to why theism is irrational.
Yes, we do. Science is testable and ultimately fixes its flaws through further observation. Theism has no observational data, is not fluid, and is a vice on comprehension. There is no denying that there are many scientists and philosophers that subscribe to the God concept. However, this is merely due to compartmentalization. Compartmentalization is where you sectionalize your thoughts into what is criticized and what is not. With theism, rational people can rationalize and critically look at everything, except when rationality and criticality are applied to their beliefs. They won't allow it, and they do not accept that their beliefs can be critiqued. The world then sees the most intelligent people become the most ignorant by not allowing critical thought to dissect the concept of God. And that was submitted by Brad Jocelyn, also known as Bash.
Yeah, good stuff.
That's a good example right there of what we were just talking about how you can be rational in many other spheres of your life, but compartmentalize a certain domain and be totally irrational in that.
Exactly.
Right.
And theism. When you say, is theism irrational, it is really a critique of that particular domain.
Brad also submitted an essay, a longer version of what was read there. That is available in the Rational Thoughts category by clicking Library of Thoughts and Views from Our Friends. And that essay is called Why Theism is Irrational by Brad Jocelyn. And that will be also where you will find Why Theism is Irrational by Samuel Thomas Poling, myself, and Ted Angst.
But yeah, speaking of compartmentalization and, you know, being in the scientific community, I see it all the time. You're dealing with the sharpest minds, like the most critical minds out there, but they will apply that to every aspect of their life, every aspect of their work, but just not to this one thing. And it never, you know, ceases to just floor me about that. And I think the biggest reason for that is basically it's because it's inculcated into us, you know, from, you know, like we were talking about before, you can go to the bathroom on your own. You're taught to believe this, and once it's in there, man, it sticks. It's got staying power.
Well, obviously, it doesn't stick because look at us.
Well, but the thing is, because and we've also made this point before, to examine it is to refute it, and you know, to the moment you start to critically look at these beliefs, they crumble, and I, you know, most people never get to that point though.
Yeah,
that's true. But
yeah,
goes back to not being able to reason.
Or just refusing to look at it. I think a lot of people are afraid to look at it.
Yeah, well, and that's what, like Mike is saying, is that these are people who definitely know how to reason and better than a lot of other people. They just have not or will not apply it to this particular domain. And I'm sure there are other domains they might not apply it to, like politics, personal relationships, yeah, and things like that as well.
Many theists claim that they have good reasons to believe that their God exists. I do not doubt their sincerity, but I explicitly deny the fact that they have good reasons. As of right now, every single argument for the existence of God has been shown to be fallacious. The theist not only has no evidence in his or her favor, but the theist must deal with various arguments against the existence of God. This is where the theist's metaphorical goose is cooked, and that was submitted by Chaos Lord 2004.
Wow.
That's a good point. Have you guys ever heard a really good argument for the existence of God?
Oh, I have.
What was that?
It's my car couldn't start to get here one day, and I had to bring it to a shop, and therefore God exists.
Scott didn't want me getting here. No, it was what? A fucking joke, guy.
Yeah, you know what's really funny, though? You know what's really funny? That my mother once made a point to me of why God exists, and it was had involved her car breaking down.
That's ironic.
She That's was really ironic. She was about an hour away from home, okay? She went into a Sears, like, tire shop or something like that, like a battery shop or something, okay? A Sears repair place. And they weren't going to be able to fix her car at the time. She was going to have to get home. And going into the same Sears was a member of her church from an hour away. And she said that that really cool coincidence, which I admit is a pretty darn cool coincidence, because that person gave her a ride home and knew her and recognized her. Okay, like happened to walk in at just the right time. First of all, just so you guys know, I didn't believe my mom. Okay, because my mom's a fucking compulsive liar, like basically. But anyway. Yeah, that's right. My mom is a born again Christian. She's a raving lunatic. All right.
I'm a God warrior.
Have you heard the David Cross routine where he does exactly that? Where he reads this little preacher's book where there's these anecdotes and they're so unbelievable, but they're told like they're true, and he just says that didn't happen. That's bullshit. It's so funny. It's told in this really elegant style of this story about this son getting an earring and it being a problem for his family and all that. But the whole thing was so unrealistic that people in the story were behaving the way no actual human beings behave in social situations. So it was so clearly it was a false story, but it was passed off as like something that really happened to this preacher, you know?
You know, honestly, I've read large parts of the Bible. I'm fascinated by it. Almost obsessed, you might say, by that and Scientology. That's a whole other story. But, you know, I'm obsessed and fascinated with all that shit. And as I said, I've read large parts of the Bible. And I will say, honestly, that the Bible truly is one of the funniest books I've ever read. It's fucking funny. It's so fucking funny. I mean, right out of the gate, it's funny. I mean, just the first six pages. I mean, that shit is like, that's the most D&D bullshit crazy shit. Like, and then the all-powerful thing swooped down and sent a plague of frogs upon all the heathens. Like, what? Let's give them more powers. Let's roll the die. And then he was dead for 3 days and rose up to heaven. That's total D&D nonsense. Anyway, it's fucking, seriously, I mean, it's just, the Bible's so crazy. I mean, first of all, look, all right, look. If you know the history of the Bible and how, and just its entire massive history and how it was written in these dead languages and then translated and then retranslated into other languages and then retranslated by monarchs based on their whims and, you know, and all this shit, and then people interpret it in their own way, and you sit there and you still, after all that shit, and realize that the Bible was written thousands of years ago when people were even dumber than we are today. Think about that. Go outside. Wait till the bar is empty out. If I can go home, watch Fox TV, and realize that, wow, the Bible is written by people even dumber than all these motherfuckers. That's the Bible you're reading and has been read to you for generations. You know, that, I mean, it's insane. It's absurd to believe in that shit. All right, first of all, forget that. Let's just look at Genesis. Just as an example. Let's look at Genesis. Right off the bat, I swear to God, the funniest six pages in literary history. God, this all-powerful God, decides he's going to make Earth. It takes him 6 days to make Earth. There's all kinds of other crazy shit going on. But it takes him 6 days, 6 calendar days, I assume it's a Gregorian calendar, but 6 days to make the Earth. And then he rests on the seventh day because he's exhausted. Woo! Man! Those rivers took a lot out of me. It's fucking God. God gets tired. God needs a nap. This isn't the God I was made to understand exists and fucking rules all our lives. God gets tired after 6 days. Oh, man, I gotta crash before I get up and do, I don't know, whatever I'm gonna do, you know. And then he decides, then he makes this huge planet. Huge, massive planet. Takes them 6 fucking days. It's huge. I don't know if you've driven cross country. That's this much of the planet. He makes the polar ice caps. He makes Ecuador. He makes Bayonne, New Jersey. He makes this huge planet. And then he decides, you know what? I'm going to put one dude in there. One guy. One guy. So he makes Adam, and he goes, enjoy! And leaves to go make Venus, I guess. So he makes Adam, and then it occurs to him later when he checks back in on him that, oh, Adam's lonely. Oh, shit, I forgot to make other people for him to hang out with. I thought he'd be able to commune with the sparrow and the fucking lungfish. I thought that would work for him. But I guess he's just sitting, taking a shit, and not knowing what to do. I didn't really have the foresight. Well, what the fuck do I know? I'm just God. I know everything. So then he goes, oh, he's lonely. So when Adam's sleeping, he takes a rib out and makes Eve for him. All right. So then Adam and Eve have Cain and Abel. You know, first of all, there's the thing with the snake in the tree. We all know that story. I don't want to, it's quite sad. I don't want to relay it right here, bum everybody out. It is our original fall from grace. And so then he makes, shh, please be quiet. I'm serious. I'm not going to be polite after this last warning. All right. So then he makes Eve, and then Adam and Eve have Cain and Abel. Then Cain slays Abel, his brother. And then Cain's punishment is he's banished from Eden and he has to go to Nod, where God provides him with a wife. So his punishment is that he doesn't have to hang out with his parents anymore, and there's somebody he can fuck whenever he wants. That's his punishment. Okay, so, and he didn't even lose a rib for it, you know. And then, so in order, but the best part about the Bible is, like, as I said in Genesis, like, after, like, page 2 through 6 when they, when Cain, gets banished, and they have to get, how they explain how from 4 people, they get to Noah's time, where the Bible kind of kicks in again, you know, and there's like 6 pages of, to get up to speed. From 4 people, there were like 1 million without explaining, you know, evolution or, you know, incest or anything like that, you know. Because there was a lot of motherfucking going on there. A lot of motherfucking, sister fucking, daughter fucking, you know, father fucking, niece fucking, cousin fucking, tons of fucking rampant incest. Tons, man. Granddaughter fucking, grandson fucking, tons. Oh. Tons of incest, you know, and explain how we get from there to 1 million people without, you know, getting into that fucking bullshit about evolution, which is a load of shit. You know, come on, the scientists with their theories and their facts, you know, that's nonsense. Everybody knows it was a talking snake in a tree. We all know that. That's how the Earth started. It wasn't this long, protracted evolutionary process. It was a talking snake in a tree. Please, we all know that. And yeah, I'll tell you what, if you're fucking that dumb, if you actually don't believe in evolution, if you really are that deluded, then I'll tell you what, as a little experiment, give an elderly person and a chimpanzee a camera and watch them both try to operate it. Same fucking thing. Like, you know, which button do I... You know, and they run around all scared, you know, and the chimp runs around, he takes a shit and he fucking throws it everywhere, and the elderly man just takes a shit, and that's evolution. Is that we've progressed to where the elderly man does not throw his poo around, and we're better off for it. But as I was saying, in order to explain how from 4 people there's like 1 million in Noah's time, there's this long list of people in Genesis. It's right. If you got it at home, look it up. When you go home, look it up. It's right there. And if you don't have it, you know what? Check into a fucking, you know, shitty, cheesy motel for like $16 and just go steal the Bible and then, you know, leave and go home. It's, the Bible's worth $16, so everybody wins. All right. And the Gideons have something to do tomorrow. So, but there's this long list of people who begat other people, and it goes on for like 6 pages. just on and on and on. So Ehad begat Jadah, and Jadah begat, you know, Jebediah, and Jebediah begat Ezekiel, and Ezekiel begat Hermaphrodite, and Hermaphrodite begat Michelin, and it just goes on and on and on and on. It goes on. But the best thing about it, the funniest thing is, they all grow up to be 840 years old. 910 years old. 940 years old. For real. And you're reading this going like, what? 940 years old? Oh my God. Have you seen a 100-year-old? What the fuck? What kind of fucking God is making people be 940 years old? Jesus, man, you're 100 years old, you fucking fall down, break your hip, that's it. Wherever you fucking land, that is where you're gonna be for the next 800 motherfucking years, all right? You are nothing but a shit and piss factory, my friend. You stay right there and slowly deteriorate and just sit there and fucking hope that a piece of fruit falls off a tree and rolls by your chin to be like, ah! You can have something to eat for once. Just sitting there praying for death. What a wonderful way to spend your life with nobody else around. That's awesome. And you know, my favorite thing about like really religious people is when they tell me they're going to pray for me. They're going to pray for me. I'm going to pray for you so hard. I'm going to pray for your soul. I'm going to pray for you so hard. I'm just going to spend the next 3 days just praying for your soul, praying for you. You know, and then I'm like, cool. All right. That's really? That's awesome. Thank you. All right, I'm going to fucking do some blow and then fuck that girl. But you got everything covered? Thank you very much. Thank you very, very much. I do appreciate it.
There you go. There's David Cross's views on the irrationality of theism.
There you go.
Special guest appearance from David Cross today on the Irrationality of Theism show.
Oh, yeah, he was right here with us with Elvis.
That's right. Boy, that's a funny clip.
If I guess then you don't have the clip where he's doing the Promise Keepers book with the earring and that. You should get that.
Well, there's a couple. There's one where he talks about the Alaskan Airlines Buddhist pasta. The one?
I don't know if it's the same disc, but that is.
Because then there's another one where he does footprints, you know, and he was like, how the story about how Jesus was carrying, you know, there's always two set of footprints,
yeah.
But I noticed that in my heart is troubling time, there's only one set of footprints,
funny, yeah.
And David Cross is like, well, that's when I was helping one of the other, you know, 50 billion other people on earth, you know, selfish prick.
yeah. No, the whole thing where he makes fun of the Promise Keepers, where he exposes this obviously bogus, ridiculous story that has a moral to it or whatever, that's a pretty funny routine. I'd look for that. I can't remember which album it's on, though.
I'll definitely be on the lookout for it. We've got to take a brief commercial break. We'll be gone about 4 minutes. If you need to go to the bathroom, pick up something to eat, go kiss the wife, pet the dog, this would be a good time to do it. Or sit tight, listen into these completely on-topic commercials. And we'll be back shortly with the irrationalities of theism. If you haven't caught on, you can stop into the chat room at rationalresponders.com, the only place where you are likely to find all of the show hosts from the Rational Response Squad when we broadcast After the Infidel Guy on Friday nights.
Hey, this is Eric Schwartz, writer, author, performer of Keep Your Jesus Off My Penis, and you are smart enough to be listening to the Rational Response Squad.
The Atheist Network is a large, tight-knit, thriving atheist community that never plays soft and never apologizes for it. The Atheist Network was created with the idea that only through honest exchange of ideas and information can we all break free of theistic influences. It's not a bashing board. It's not a brainiac board. It's a community of atheists as diverse as you can find. We welcome all atheists to come and join the fun. Come join us at www.atheistnetwork.com. That's www.atheistnetwork.com.
Thanks for listening to the Rational Response Squad. This spot would be the perfect place for you to advertise your free thought-related business or organization. With rates as low as 2 cents per listener, we blow away the advertising competition. Furthermore, what better way to spread the word than to support an organization fighting to free humanity from the mind disease known as theism? Send a message to rationalresponsesquad@hotmail.com to learn about our rates. Again, that's rationalresponsesquad@hotmail.com. Your ad could be right here in next week's episode.
The Rational Response Squad has taught me that I don't have to say under God in school when I pledge to the flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. The Rational Response Squad can be found at www.rationalresponders.com. Check them out today.
Hi, this is Julia Sweeney. In my new play, Letting Go of God, I come out clearly as an atheist, absolutely committed to keeping church and state separate. Won't you join me and the Freedom From Religion Foundation in waking up America to the growing dangers of theocracy? Phone 1-800-335-4021. That's 1-800-335-4021. Or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org. That's ffrf.org.
In the Bible, it tells us in Mark 3:29 that whoever may blaspheme against the Holy Spirit never has forgiveness, but is guilty of an eternal sin. In other words, those who deny the Holy Spirit's existence can never get to heaven. They can never be forgiven. And with that said, I'm Brian Sapient, and I deny the existence of the Holy Spirit.
I'm Rick Hawkins, and through my study of the Bible, there's no way that the Holy Spirit could even possibly exist. It was a forgery. Therefore, I deny the Holy Spirit.
I'm Yellow Number 5, and I deny the Virgin Mother Raping Holy Spirit.
I'm Kelly M78, and I deny the Holy Spirit.
I'm Richard Carrier, and I deny the Holy Spirit because it's, well, patently ridiculous.
There's no point trying to save us, folks. You're listening to the Rational Response Squad.
Bowling for Columbine did it to the gun culture. Supersize Me did it to fast food. Now the God who wasn't there does it to religion. Holding modern Christianity up to a bright spotlight, this bold and often hilarious new film asks the questions few dare to ask. Your guide through the world of Christendom is former fundamentalist Brian Fleming, joined by such luminaries as Jesus Seminar fellow Robert Price, Professor Richard Dawkins, author Sam Harris, and historian Richard Carrier. See the movie the Los Angeles Times calls provocative, to put it mildly. Hold on to your faith. It's in for a bumpy ride. Purchase The God Who Wasn't There at www.rationalresponders.com.
This is Jesus of Zion. I'm on MySpace, and you can come see me at Zion's King 777. We're listening to the Rational Response Squad, and I love you.
The Rational Response Squad is your voice of rational thought online. Please subscribe today at www.rationalresponders.com for access to all of their shows.
I'm Richard Carrier, author of Sense and Goodness Without God. And you can buy my book at evolvefish.com and help support the Rational Response Squad.
And we are back with the Rational Response Squad, www.rationalresponders.com, with views about the irrationalities of theism from our community.
So shall we do another?
I think the rationality of theism, for me, has mainly been a question of mechanism. The idea of a God who controls or guides our lives is still lacking insofar as a definite mechanism with which he controls same. There is no such invisible hand as I see it, and as so far as good things happen to bad people, or vice versa, no understandable way exists of control. And every Buddhist or Christian or Muslim or Hindu I have ever talked to had drawn a blank when it came to mechanism. The way things have to work, every time, the same way. I know that's what I trust about science. Not that it will work every time, but that when it doesn't, I have a reasonable chance to find out why. Not just blame it on a thing I must accept that I can never understand. Fuck that. We were made for better things. And here's a quote from Galileo. I do not feel obliged to believe that the same God who has endowed us with sense, reason, and intellect has intended us to forego their use. It's cheesy, but apt, I think. Submitted by Drunky Griffin.
That speaks volumes right there about just accepting baseless claims.
Well, yeah, that's an example that it goes across all of supernaturalism. It's one of the debates and discussions that I get into with other naturalist philosophers is whether supernatural theories are even testable. Right. And it's very commonly assumed that they're not. But I made the point and demonstrated it with examples that you can formulate a testable supernatural theory. It's just when you do, it's refuted by the evidence.
This is my favorite thing. So on that topic here, I don't know if you ever heard about people who believe that they can escape their bodies in dreams, like lucid dreaming.
Oh, yeah. Okay. It goes all the way back to Roman times.
There's actually a test where people can take a piece of paper before they go to bed at night.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Or have somebody else do it in another house. Okay. Someone they know. Okay.
Susan Blackmore discusses this.
Right. You write it down and you put it on top of a shelf somewhere, and that person is supposed to leave their body, fly up to wherever it is, okay, in another person's house, read it, and then tell the person the next day what it is. Not once ever has that test ever been successfully completed. It's just ridiculous. I mean,
and that's, yeah, and that's relates to the issue of mechanism, which that was the point being made by Drunky Griffin.
Right.
Is that what's lacking from supernatural theories is the mechanism. So it's actually not an explanatory theory at all. I mean, when they say God did it or an angel did it or magic did it or ESP did it, it's actually not an explanation.
It's replacing a question mark.
Right,
question
exactly. Mark, you're not even proposing a model or a mechanism by which the phenomenon is to be explained. So it's really a cover for an explanation, which is inherently irrational.
Exactly. It is very irrational. And again, one of the reasons why theism is irrational.
And science is true science is direct opposite of what we were just talking about. Science actually does supply explanations, it supplies mechanisms. And yes, science occasionally is incorrect, but it also has a self-correcting mechanism into the scientific method.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. You have science, which doesn't necessarily go out to give all the answers, okay? What it's doing is this provides the method in which you can obtain the answers. There are some pieces missing, for example, the evolutionary equation. However, evolution in itself is a proven theory. It works. It's testable. We see the effects every day. There's no reason for anybody to claim that, evolution is beyond, unprovable. It's not. It's proven.
Oh, they make that claim all the time.
Any sensible person could make that claim. They're simply wrong. Just because you lack something does not mean that it's totally void of any explanation.
That something isn't completely explained doesn't mean that it's not explainable.
Exactly. So, but replacing that question with something supernatural to fill the gap is,
The God of the gaps.
God of the gaps,
Well, I think one of the important distinctions between science and any kinds of supernatural belief is that when you have the supernatural belief, they just say, oh, it's a mystery, the end.
Right.
But
with
science, even though we can't explain everything right now, today, right this second, the search is still on for the answer. We're not just satisfied with saying, oh, it's the big mystery. Like, I can't explain to you how my lucid dreaming occurs. I can't plan it so that I can go to my friend's house and read what she has written on her paper.
Right.
That's actually one of my biggest gripes about supernatural beliefs, about theism in general, is that, when you've already got all the answers, when the answer to every conceivable question is God did it, well, all right, we're done. Why bother, exploring the universe? Why bother learning more about the world around us? Everything's already been answered, and it gets us nowhere. There's no practical application of such an answer of theism or anything like that. It doesn't help us.
You know what I think is the most respectable is a person who can sit there and say, I don't have all the answers, but you know what? That doesn't affect my daily life. You know what I mean? For example, we each live our days with the notion that everything we do is going to be affected or to affect the evident world around us. Everything that we see, come in contact with, touch, taste, whatever. It's all based on what's evident, what we can actually see and do. Belief in a God is not necessary for the same reasons that you're talking about, because it doesn't affect our world around us. It's not evident. That mystery aspect is a perfect example. We don't have that evident thing to grasp, so it's going to be a mystery. We can't understand it, so therefore, why even believe in it? Do you even believe in something that you don't understand? I mean, honestly, that's a question to ask yourself. If you have no understanding of it, no grasp of it, you can't really believe in it because you have no idea what it is. So, it's just beyond insane to me. Do we have another You should keep going.
Oh, yeah,
you're getting
there's
good.
Tons.
These are really getting good.
Okay. Theism is irrational because I am not a god. I think so, too. We should not work to end theistic belief because the very beauty of free thinking is that there will always be a diverse community of people believing different things. Instead, time and effort should be put into ending dogma and the effects of dogma on a democratic civilization, for example, creationism in schools, religiosity, breakdown of the separation of church and state. To uphold an entirely non-biased secular view, theist and atheist alike. And that was submitted by Incognito Non-Cognitivist.
He's got a good point there. I think dogma, more than anything else, is the real enemy, is the real thing that holds back progress. There's really not much else to say.
Well, yeah. That's basically the point, is that you can't get to true beliefs until you can get rid of false beliefs.
Right.
But if you're not even going to question beliefs, you're obviously never going to find out if they're true or false.
Exactly.
So you can't make progress with if you embrace any kind of dogma, that your beliefs in that domain will never progress towards the truth.
That was just amazing way to put it. Rejecting the false beliefs before you can actually get to the real ones to reject them.
Well, I think that the dogma too, like if you look at the Ten Commandments, the very first commandment is thou shalt have no other gods before me. So the most important tenet of any religious dogma is first and foremost to never question it.
Oh, of course.
So you can't, you can never progress to getting rid of the theistic belief as long as you have been prohibited from even looking at it.
See, I don't know. I think that's questionable in some religious beliefs. In some religious beliefs, they actually kind of demand that you question, but it's the type of questioning that you should be demanding that isn't being done. Like, for example, in Gnosticism, questioning is the prime mover. If you don't question in Gnosticism, you're never going to achieve Gnosis. So in reality, in some beliefs, they want you to question, but it's the wrong type of questioning, the wrong line of questioning. You need to be asking yourself, why do we even have to bother with this religion? Why can't I just ask myself questions without it? That's the right question, not how do I achieve Gnosis? It's why do I need Gnosis? You know? So, I'm sure you could probably come up with like 10 religions or 10 types of philosophy in Greek thought that have questioning as a prime motivation, but still having an irrational basis for those questions.
Yeah, that's true. Or you can have philosophies that advocate questioning but still compartmentalize and use sort of fallacious reasoning to argue for the existence of a god, for example.
Right.
Most of the philosophical schools in antiquity were theistic. So, yeah, that's definitely true.
Yeah.
Okay, Kelly, you have other views and comments there from the forum on why theism is irrational?
Yes, I do. Theism is irrational because it objectifies idealizations of human existence and posits them beyond human experience and leads to delusions of deferred gratification, a tolerance of the status quo, whether it be a caste system or a class system. Modern society has sufficient rational capabilities in terms of moral and practical knowledge to check those aspects of science that operate on what can be done over that which should be done. And if anything, moral reasoning is inhibited by theism as it detaches it from the human authorship of the world. And he wants to know if that was 100 words yet. From me, Tarzan, you, God.
Wow. These are really kooky names. Okay.
But that's a valid point, though, how theistic belief actually does impair moral reasoning and leads to moral beliefs that actually lead to harm. I mean, I think of a stark example and that I often am reminded of through religious activism and so forth. Abortion has become virtually unavailable in several states.
Yes.
It's not illegal. It's just they make it so difficult for an abortion clinic to even open its doors that they're no longer there. And so women can't even cross state lines or get an abortion. And at the same time where there are abortion clinics in these rare places, they'll have Christians go out there and yell and intimidate these women and so forth. And
it's actually going around right now. I mean, there's signs going around in Allentown and Lehigh Valley in my area
where
people are driving trucks around. Like, I'm talking huge trailer trucks with pictures of aborted babies on the side of the truck. I mean, I shit you not. I mean, these people are trying to make a statement, like aborted fetuses and limbs and embryos. I mean,
if we look at what the actual consequences of this behavior is that it's actually causing a certain degree of misery and anxiety in women. Actual women are being hurt by this policy. Some cases their lives are being ruined, or the children are having opportunities. They're being forced into situations where they're not going to have a good parenting environment. They're not going to have a good education and so on.
I mean, you can't...
And they're actually causing real physical harm in the real world because of this silly belief in a soul that they don't even... They can't even show when the soul enters the fetus, even if it does, you know?
Like, how many times... we were just talking about this in another show about, you know, the fact that... How many bodies were dissected during the Middle Ages to try to find the soul when the soul left the body? They couldn't even find when the soul left the body.
Yeah.
The soul was located in the brain. I want somebody to point out where the house is for the soul and the brain, because I would love to just knock on the door and be like, the fuck out of my head.
Well, yeah. You know? In antiquity, it was a common Jewish belief that the soul actually hovered around the body for several days.
Right.
And then in a really earlier belief, it's been argued, it was believed that the soul remained in the body and that the body could still feel, so that if you like punched the body, they'd be causing them suffering and so forth. So you know,
but
it sounds kooky, but it's no more kooky than believing that there's a soul that enters during conception into the cell. You know, it doesn't make any sense.
Well, I'm pretty certain that in the Bible, most of the Torah pretty much goes against any sort of afterlife or spiritual life when the body dies.
Oh, Torah? Is that what you said?
Yes.
In early testamental Judaism, they didn't not have a belief in an afterlife, right? Yeah.
So, I mean, that's purely, you know, added on to, you know, whether it be by Orphic tradition or not. So,
The first influence was through Zoroastrianism, through the exile,
right?
In the 500s, 400s. And that's when they start getting the resurrection belief. They might have gotten a soul belief earlier than that, but again, it would have been inherited from surrounding cultures.
Right.
Even in the Old Testament, there is a clear difference between the value of an adult human life and the life of a fetus. If a woman who's pregnant has her child killed by a man, then it's worth money to them, but it's not an offense. It's punishable by death like it would be if he actually killed that woman.
Right.
So I don't see where this basis is that people have for, you know, God hates abortion so much that they...
Well, he also massacred every firstborn son. Like, how many times did he do that? Like, 50?
Well, you're 50? Not supposed to question what God does, because he's allowed to do anything, right?
I deny the Holy Spirit. Okay. And I have a shirt that says that.
In fact, everybody at the Rational Response Squad denies the Holy Spirit. Have you denied the Holy Spirit on air before?
I deny the Holy Spirit.
There you go.
Oh, man, we asked for an applause right
there.
The only
unforgivable sin.
Everybody at the Rational Response Squad denies the Holy Spirit, the only unforgivable sin. So there's no use trying to even save us. We are all fucked.
Don't even pray for us. Keep your prayers.
If the God of the Bible exists, however, we are too smart for that. You can purchase the I Deny the Holy Spirit t-shirt at cafepress.com/respondrational.
I designed it.
So, any other thoughts there? We've got, you know, a whole community that's...
Well, there are a ton of thoughts
here.
Some of them are more like essays.
That's fine, yeah. You know what?
I love essays.
The ones you like.
Yeah.
Pick out the ones you like.
By the way, all these views are available at our forum, and I'll change the format so that these views last for eternity, or until some Christian figures out how to hack us and get rid of everything.
Don't give them the idea.
So you can find these views at the rationalresponders.com forum and click on the Rational Response Squad forum. Currently, I'm going to change the title. I'm going to change the title, and the title is going to be something like Views of the Community on the Irrationality of Theism. So look for it. You can find all the views of our community on why theism is irrational. Read them. Feel free to refute them, but not in that thread. We'll move your post to Atheist vs. Theist, and we'll talk to you about it. In fact, if you haven't noticed, at our message board, we have a new forum called Kill 'em with Kindness. We have been accused of being too rude on our message board, and we thought that we should show you guys how nice we are able to be.
That's actually my fault.
The forum is called Kill 'em with Kindness.
Rook's a dick.
We have brought in a theist friend who is a Christian to moderate the forum alongside of Ricky Roma, a well-known poster in our community who is also a very pleasant atheist. No insults or cursing is allowed in that forum, and some rules are being worked on right now, rules such as no preaching or no ad hominem. So definitely check out that forum if you're a little too scared to deal with us when we call you out for the fucktard that you are in the regular Atheist vs. Theist forum.
And I will do it.
Okay. Now, this is a mini essay here, so. Theism is irrational because it fails to meet the standards of evidence required of rational beliefs. In order for a belief to be considered rational, the probability that the belief is true must be above 50%. Unfortunately, however, beliefs do not come with neatly quantified probabilities. Consequently, for beliefs like theism, it is our task to examine all of the evidence available to us, both for and against the belief, and then determine which direction the evidence points. Then, to be a rational person, we should choose to accept beliefs supported by the evidence available to us and reject beliefs unsupported by the evidence. In the case of theism, my experience thus far has convinced me that not only are there no good arguments for theism, there are many good arguments against it. My purpose in this essay is to explain briefly why I accept this sort of evidentialism and have concluded that theism is unsupported by the evidence and should therefore be considered irrational. There are at least three potential responses to the line of reasoning above, and hopefully we can make short work of the first two. Specifically, it may be claimed that A, one is entitled to believe in God irrationally, or B, that belief in God is properly basic and therefore can be held rationally without evidence or arguments in its favor. In regard to A, if one admits the irrationality of theism yet chooses to believe anyway, there is little hope. Since such a person's belief in God is likely based heavily on emotion, the defender of A will probably not be persuaded by arguments no matter how strong they are. The best chance for the defender of A may be the gradual illumination of men's minds by science described by Darwin. In regard to B, I find such reformed epistemology to be deeply flawed and question-begging. It is striking that the position that belief in God is properly basic and therefore can be held rationally without arguments or evidence in its favor must itself be defended. However, upon defending this position, it has become an argument that attempts to rationally justify belief in God. Thus, the defender of B cannot argue for his or her position without falling into contradiction. Furthermore, even the leading reformed epistemologists admittedly can provide no sufficient criteria for properly basicality if theism is accepted as properly basic.
By the way, this is written by Skep Dick, Richard Spencer, and he is the man. Is this the right one? Yes. It ends with Richard Spencer, right?
Mm-hmm.
He'll be on a future show. He's a rocker. He's an atheist rocker.
Kick ass.
It's almost like a death metal where I was talking about how you can't understand the lyrics, but he's got to come on because it's so cool to see some of these guys that just come across like real hardcore in one sense. And I mean, he's a brilliant philosopher on another. Proclaim comes to mind the same type of way. He's like a ghetto rapper with degrees in philosophy and psychology and, you know, raps nothing about, you know, other than, you know, philosophy and Nietzsche and, you know, so. In fact, you heard Proclaim today in our new intro song. So, but go on with what Skeptic had to say.
Okay. Quite obviously, the third response to my opening paragraph would be C. Theism is rational. The defender of C will simply claim that I have either improperly evaluated the evidence for and against theism, or that I have not examined enough of the evidence before reaching my conclusion. This is fair enough, for it may well be the case. I will therefore take it as my duty for the remainder of this essay to explain why I believe various theistic arguments fail and atheistic arguments succeed. In parentheses, he says, goes on to list theistic arguments and debunk them brilliantly and contrast them with atheistic arguments.
Actually, I put that in there. because you know, the essay was several pages long.
Oh, okay.
And he basically went through all the well-known theistic arguments and countered them with the atheistic arguments. Just for the sake of brevity, I had to take them out.
Oh,
if you guys are interested, you can find those on our forums.
Okay. In conclusion, it may benefit us to note that any faith-based belief cannot be held rationally. Because faith provides us with no method for distinction between true and false propositions, it is clearly epistemologically invalid. Thus, an appeal to faith cannot salvage anything lost here. In the final analysis, theism is irrational. For anyone concerned with responding to irrational emergencies, belief in God should put us on the highest alert. Until humanity is satisfied with taking a fully natural view of ourselves and our place in the universe, humanity will be inevitably plagued by the God delusion and the tangible consequences of irrational belief. For this reason, it is in the best interests of humanity to abandon theism, and it is our moral obligation to facilitate this change.
Was that a different piece, or was that still Richard Spencer?
No, that was all from Skeptic.
Yeah. Okay, and that whole piece is available in that thread that I mentioned at rationalresponders.com, and it's the Rational Response Squad forum, and you know, you should be able to see all the posts from the Irrationality of Theism there. Hey guys, Buddy 2 is well known within the community, and he did a rant on religion once, and I think his views should be heard in this show as well. 4 minutes and 52 seconds, I'll play it now.
All right, someone's going to have to explain the logic of this one to me because I'm completely screwed on it. This is like a week ago. I'm sitting here using my $2,500 Pentium 3 computer to emulate 8-bit Nintendo games like a good wasteful American, and there's a knock on the door. I go answer it, and the dude at the door shoves a little book in my face and says, "Hi, would you like to take some of our literature, and maybe we can come inside and talk about the Lord for a while?" "Why, sure. And afterwards, can I come to your house, smear chicken blood on the walls, build a fire in your living room to dance around, and then shoot you in the f***ing head?" "Ah! What's with this? Why are these freaks knocking on my door?" Okay, I'm not bashing Christianity here. I'm really not. I think people ought to be free to choose what they want to believe. But you have to admit, you guys have got to have the highest percentage of people who should have their heads crushed by a falling value jet. It's not bad enough I have people selling me things on the phone all day and all night. I have to have some twink at my door trying to sell me religion? Sure, come on in and just have a seat there while I summon Satan and watch him eat your fucking eyeballs out. We have to stop this, okay? Religion must die, and we have to kill it. You think it's bad now? Wait till these guys get sponsorship from one of these mega corporations. "Oh, here's a pamphlet just for you from the Lord and Microsoft." Hey, don't laugh, because it will happen, and the day that it does, I'm gonna push this big red button I have and blow up the entire world, because at that point, it will be a lost f***ing cause. Heaven forbid I get to live my life in peace without someone trying to save my soul. Forget about my soul, okay? There's nothing in there worth saving. My soul would French kiss your mother just to watch you squirm. My soul would show your children pornography so they wouldn't have to grow up in the same oppressed world you did. Besides, hey, I may already have my own beliefs. Whoa! Didn't think of that, did you? Your beliefs aren't the only ones out there, buddy. Not by far. Tell your God to take a fucking number, because there are already hundreds of them floating around before yours was ever thought up. That's right, people were sacrificing saviors and worshiping jealous messiahs for thousands of years before the hallucinogen that created yours was even discovered. And I haven't heard from any worshippers of Amon-Ra or Buddha lately, so get in line, pal. But our God is the one true God. Yeah, yours and every other society since life crawled out of the mud. That's the part that really gets to me, okay? That's the part that really, really pisses me off. You can't come by and say, "Hi, we've got this God and we really think he's bitching, right? So here's a booklet so you can read about him and decide if you want to come to church with us." No, no. Yours is the one, single, only, all-holy deity. And if I don't believe in him, then he's going to cast me into hell, so I'd better come to your church. And oh, by the way, don't forget my checkbook so that I can buy my way into the one true heaven, too. Tell you what, why don't you kiss my entire ass, okay? Kiss the whole ass. Start on one end and just smooch your way all the way to the other end, okay? Because this is just your way of telling me that any gods I have are fantasies, right? My gods suck and yours rule, right? Tell you what, take your spiritual penis measuring contest to someone else's front door, okay? I don't need it. Get away from my house before I decide to slap the dust off your brain. Can't we make a law that says we can crack some of these guys over the head with a pipe wrench or something? Okay, this is a true story. I'm not making this up. I'm on the university campus up here, and there's this Christian thing going on called Crosswalk, where they carry a cross around the grounds to remind people of Jesus' suffering, right? Well, I'm sitting there, and this guy goes by with a big paper mache cross and hands it off to another guy. The thing is about 6 feet tall, and it has wheels on the bottom. What the f*** are you thinking? If Jesus Christ ever came back and saw you doing that, he'd probably roll up his sleeves and beat the living hell out of you, and you know what? I'd help him. Paper mache? What the paper mache? mache? Try Wood Buster. It's a few hundred pounds heavier. And wheels? F***ing wheels! Did God have wheels? I don't think so. Did he have someone to hand this thing off to? I don't think so. You're supposed to be reminding people of Jesus' suffering here, and you're not even breaking a sweat. But that's the whole Christian philosophy, right? Reliving the life of Christ, emulating Jesus Christ. Well, I'll tell you something. You're never gonna do it because you're too much of a pussy. Jesus walked hundreds of miles in the desert. He made thousands of enemies and 12 friends. He was beaten, thrown in jail, and they finally hung him up on a big chunk of wood and killed his ass. And here you're whining about a bad hair day. Your powdered yuppie ass would break in two if you went through one day of what Jesus is. That's called hypocrisy, dumbass, and it pisses me off. So, I've got a solution to all this. Are you ready? You want these nuts to stop coming to your house? Buy a gun. No, it's not what you're thinking. You don't have to shoot it. The thing doesn't even have to work. All you have to do is take it apart and keep the pieces in a box near the table. Then when these guys knock on your door, pull out the pieces and start cleaning them right there in front of them. Jesus gave his life, but these guys will fall over each other trying to get the hell out of your house if you do that. And please, whatever you do, don't send them over to my house because my gun is actually loaded. This is Two, your blasphemous ranting griffin, and that's all I have to say about that.
Great.
Yeah, there's Two right there. Now, we got some thoughts on that. Of course, you know, I think most of us in the room don't believe Jesus ever existed.
No.
Of course, and if he did you say that Jesus did have somebody to hand the cross off to?
Yeah, well, it's like a big contradiction thing in the Bible where when he's carrying the cross, he hands it off to somebody who helps carry the load because it was too much for him to
Simon
bear.
Of Cyrene.
Simon, that's right,
I
Simon.
I see.
So, but it doesn't exist in all the Gospels. It's only in like two out of three synoptics. So.
Right. But yeah, there you go. There's Two on religion. And back to the views of the community.
Theism is irrational because it doesn't get me laid. And anything that doesn't serve the higher purpose of getting a piece of ass is completely irrational. Thank you, apples for Adam.
Yeah, you should say that in a really sexy voice, too. I think
you don't think that was a really sexy voice?
It should be even more.
Or you mean like, Richard Carrier in a really sexy voice?
That would be interesting to hear. I don't know.
That would be bizarre, actually. Yeah. Especially because the content and male voice, yeah. It would all conflict.
I had to throw that one for a bit of levity. I thought that was
all right. So definitely next piece, Richard Carrier, views from our community on the rationality of theism.
Theism is irrational because it takes the healthy concept of pride and confidence in oneself, a theme that I believe the Bible to be more accurately interpreted as, and rapes it into an unconditional love in oneself, resulting in a harrowing display of bigotry. Instead of falling in love with a God, quote-unquote, the theist is actually falling in love with certain good human attributes. That isn't wrong. But then they claim these attributes as unique to themselves, having a, quote-unquote, personal relationship with God. Then they fall in love with the idea of God/good human attributes flourishing inside them and, in turn, fall in love with themselves, selfishly, to the point that they view their neighbors as lesser, whether or not they admit it. Not only is this damaging to the victim's concept of the world and relationships with non-theists, but it also begins to decay his/her ability to make wise choices in how he or she relates to fellow theists. From Static.
I really hate that. I seriously do. All the arguments about, I have a personal relationship with God, and therefore I know he exists. I freaking hate that shit. Like, shut the fuck up. What the fuck is that? How do you have a personal relationship with something that you can't even see, talk to, or
that
hear?
That goes to exactly what we were saying earlier in the opening piece with that Sam Poling role, which is that, you know, they're lying. They're simply lying. They don't know.
No.
They're simply lying. You know, and I had never phrased it like that before. I was always, you know, I'd be worried about using that term like that, but he's right. They're lying. They know. They know. They know they're full of shit. They're lying. So.
Well, I don't know about that.
And if they're lying.
They're definitely lying.
If they're not lying, they're mentally insane.
They are clinically mentally insane and need to be committed
to a mental institution.
They have a sickness called theism, trying to cure.
Theism is a mind disease. It clearly is a mind disease that will make you lie to your fellow man, to your kids.
To yourself.
To yourself, okay, in order to excuse itself away. It's completely irrational.
We brought this up on another show in the past with the Jewish intervention with my friend Nick. You know, people think they're having a spiritual relationship with God because they feel something, you know, whether it be an elevated high from church or, you know, coming out of a Billy Graham convention, as was seen in the God It Wasn't There movie. But, you know, there's actually parts of the brain which we have found and discovered where these feelings come from. Like, it's not like it's we don't know where these feelings are coming from. They're coming from some supernatural entity. We know where they stem. We know why they have. I mean, you know, when you can test that spiritual, you know, feeling that you get, obviously it's something natural. It's not something supernatural that you're getting. People get that when they're outside looking at nature. You can get that when, you know, you get a really good grade on a report card. You know, I mean, that feeling is something that happens when something really important that's going on in your life, you know, really catches you off guard. And, you know, I would get that when I'm watching Saving Private Ryan, when it dawns on me that all those people died charging the Normandy Beach. Okay, that's not God talking to me. That's me, you know, having some kind of empathy towards that. I mean, that's what religion gets its basis from, is empathy. Empathy towards the suffering. Empathy towards, you know, being normal human being and not having any control over what's going to happen to you in the future. I mean, that's why it gets so strong. So, to me, saying that you have a personal relationship with God is bullshit. You have a personal relationship with every other human being out there. I think that's what we should be looking at. Not some higher power, but, you know, actually having this, you know, relationship with the human race. You know, I mean, that's where it belongs, you know.
Right. I think that was the point that Static was making, that it's that quote unquote personal relationship that ends up separating people from, you know, the rest of humanity. And he also made the point on basically that, you know, theism takes the concepts of pride and self-confidence and rapes it. What do you guys think about that? I tend to agree.
I agree with that.
I'm not quite sure I understand what the point is.
It's, you know, when he says that, you know, pride and self-confidence, it rapes it. What he's saying is it totally destroys any pride you have in yourself. Any sort of, you know, anything you attribute to yourself, your own doing, like, you know, for example, with the miners in Pennsylvania when they were trapped in the mine. All right.
Right.
When all those firefighters were there rescuing them, spending time away from their families, all those hours working as hard as they could to pull these people out. In the end, they dubbed it a miracle from God. Even though those firefighters were really ones that got there. Even though those miners were actually had to have the will to survive. So it's not God as much as it is attributing themselves the ability to live and to do the things that they have to do to survive in the evident world around us. So
yeah, I make the same point in one of my articles online, where the example is when someone recovers from an illness or something, and they thank God, but they don't thank the doctor who cured them and the society that educated her.
Exactly. So you know, it's and you
the
can
thanks
find
are not being delivered to where they're due.
Right, and you can find those articles at www.infidels.org. You can search in the library for Richard Carrier. He's a lot of articles on there.
I was going to say earlier, when we were talking about the phenomenon in the brain that causes spiritual experience,
yeah.
There's a really interesting book by Edmund Cohen called The Minds of the Bible Believer. Hmm. And he goes into some depth talking about the God belief is being almost like a split personality, and that through the practice of prayer, you're actually engaging in a form of self indoctrination and strengthening the neural connections in your brain that are going to lead you to have this experience where you feel this presence. And so for those people, I wouldn't say that they're lying about their experience of God, but that they literally have deluded themselves in the sense that in their brain, they feel that presence, which they interpret to be God.
Right. Also, they're not really necessarily lying, you know, in the sense that, you know, your shirt's red, what you say is blue. It's more in the term that, you know, they're actually telling themselves something over and over again, repeatedly, through repetition, they're lying to themselves. Eventually, it becomes fact to them.
Yes.
But they're still lying, because it's not really happening. It's, I mean, you know, a lie is just a deceptive tale. You know?
Yeah, they're, I think I'm...
Richard Carrier, you're not drunk again, are you?
No.
Okay.
More, probably more accurate to say that they're deceiving themselves.
Well, deception is still a lie.
Exactly, you're right.
You know, I mean, don't sugarcoat it. I mean, that's what it is. You know, it's unfortunate. I see it all the time at work. You know, there's some Christians at work that they can't seem to understand what they're doing to themselves. And although they can tell it doesn't make any sense, they can't break away from it because, you know, it's just got them. So what you're saying is, I think it's amazing. I didn't know the book existed. What was it called again?
The Mind of the Bible Believer.
I have to look that up. You want to get to another one?
I'll read another one here. There are many reasons why people must rethink and deny God theories, but I will only mention one. Believing in things that are illogical and false, and such a basic topic for the growth of your personality, for sure will lead to great confusions and contradictions in each and every part of your life later. And through this, you leave the doors open to others who claim to have power and knowledge and all the facts to easily occupy your head. And that was submitted by Vasilis. I think Vasilis is making the point here that once you've opened the, you know, once by accepting, you know, theism, you've opened a door to a lot of, basically, you know, potentials for abuse by other people, abuse by the clergy, by your preachers. They're the ones that are going to manipulate you.
And politicians.
And politicians.
That well, key example.
And a lot of times, George Bush. A lot of times the preacher and a politician are the same person nowadays.
Yeah, that's true.
So, and they're going to basically manipulate your worldview and basically use you, you know, to their own ends, basically take away your volition and, you know, make it their own. So I think that's a good point. The next point is probably one of my favorites. It's a very short and to the point, and it was written in by Alechero. It says, "The irrationality of theism is, ultimately, that it replaces magnificent truths with unimaginative lies, it replaces human compassion with inhuman intolerance, and that it replaces endless potential with arbitrary boundaries demarcated only by the fear of imaginary gods on the part of those who choose that benighted path." Does anybody have any comments on that comment?
No.
No, I mean, some of these, they just stand on their own, really, Mike. These are, sure. These are great points. Once again, you're listening to the Rational Response Squad. Visit us at www.rationalresponders.com. You can purchase our shows to support our efforts to end theism because it is irrational. We are trying to free humanity from the mind slavery known as theism. And we need all the support we can get. So click purchase shows at the top of any page at rationalresponders.com. And look forward to projects like The War on Christmas and The War on Easter. Again, our mock of Bill O'Reilly. And you can check out endchristmas.com, which is currently being worked on. And what you'll see actually is a joint venture between endchristmas.com, antitheism.net, and maybe a revamped Rational Responder site one day. We use a new program in which we can get endchristmas.com and antitheism.net into the same membership. So if you sign up at one site, you'll be signed up at both. And we'll have some discussions there on how to end Christmas, because Christians don't even know the roots of Christmas most of the time.
Yeah.
And the fact that it has nothing to do with Jesus Christ.
Yes, because there were pine trees in first century Judea.
Right. All right. I'm going to read Nick Poling's comment now. He doesn't know this yet, but I'm going to award him a Rational Response Squad VIP membership today for his hard work on his new radio show. He will be running the Rational Response Squad Washington side of things. The state of Washington will now be represented by a Rational Response Squad radio show with Nick and his brother Sam Poling. And you can check them out at our message boards. For now, the shows will be free. Very, very funny stuff. Very funny stuff. So definitely check them out. So he says, "Delusions are the most irrational things. Things people believe are true, even when it makes no sense at all. To be rational is to think. To be a theist is not to think. Theism is the opposite of rationality."
Yeah, pretty much stands on its own.
Additionally, Otterpop writes in, "Theism promotes the loss of personal responsibility, decision-making, and reasoning ability. Individuals involved in a religious organization lose more of their personal strengths the longer they stay affiliated. After admittedly becoming one of a flock, these people are then groomed to accept anything that is delivered in fancy packaging from someone who holds more power. Therefore, this flock is easily mobilized by devious politicians and corrupt clergy. The flock has causes handed to them with a mandate, help or burn in hell. With such limited options, those undereducated voters march to the polls, voting on bills they neither understand nor are truly concerned about. After getting followers hooked on a godhead, it is simple to point to a leader in any community and deem them chosen. In my opinion, theism in the United States has reached an alarming level that needs to be addressed immediately before it has an even more devastating effect on our policies and culture. Again, that was from Otter Pop.
Well, and I think that's a great point.
Yeah.
By accepting theism, you're accepting so much more. Yeah, I mean, it's not just the belief in a god. So often it ends up being, you're basically handing your life over to someone else to tell you what to believe, what to think, you know, whether it be a book, you know, or what your preacher says about sex, what your preacher says about politics, you know, you're letting your life being run from the pulpit, essentially.
This show is about the irrationality of theism, and to wrap it up, I want to read you a piece from a buddy of mine, wrote this about 10 years ago. His name is Jeffrey Brown, and it's called The Dangers of Religion. For anyone to say I am a little bitter about organized religion is sort of like saying that someone who has their head cut off is bleeding a little. I'm sure I'm going to piss off a few true believers here. Quite possibly I'm going to be accused of being a godless heathen or some such. I don't really care what you think of me. Just think without the glaze of religion over your faces for once in your lives. For years, I've towed the line of an agnostic. I was unwilling or unable to prove to myself one way or another concerning the existence of any God. As I continued my education, such a dangerous thing, education, I came to realize that with very few exceptions, organized religion is one of the primary causes of suffering and cruelty in this world and has been for thousands of years. Even the peace-loving Hindu Buddhists of India are hypocrites, testing nuclear weapons when the rest of the world is trying to outgrow them. When we explore the origins of religion, we see a number of motivations coming together in one neat little package. The consolidation of power over the masses, creating a common moral code of living. The fellowship of human beings in one place. The accumulation of wealth, which is untaxable. Political influence and peddling behind the scenes, answering the questions which remain unanswerable. While not all of these things are bad, I think it is easy to see that there are just a few problems here. First of all, the consolidation of power over the masses in Christianity hit its zenith during the Dark Ages, when the church dominated the often ignorant and illiterate masses. Striking them with the awe of God was as easy as building massive churches and filling them with art, plundered treasures, and stained glass. These people were truly sheep, and their clergy were their willing shepherds. Their clergy kept control by calling anyone who dared challenge them witches or heretics, and through torture and execution they used fear to keep the masses in line, including kings. This eventually led to the Renaissance, Protestant Reformation, and the breakup of the Catholic monopoly. Kind of reminds me of the breakup of the bell system here in America. If you think it couldn't possibly have been that bad, then you need to look seriously at the countries which still run things like most of Europe did during the Dark Ages. Just look at the fundamentalist religious dictatorships in the Middle East for your inspiration, and you will see how much good comes from organized religion when it runs every aspect of a citizen's life. Creating a common moral code of living is probably one of the more positive ideas to come out of religion. However, who decides what that code shall be? We are not given the choice of making our own code, obviously. We are forced into a code that is determined by God. Of course, not only are there the Ten Commandments to deal with, many of which make little or no sense whatsoever, but endless contradicting requirements spread throughout both the Old and New Testaments. When it was the clergy interpreting the scripture for us, things were so much simpler than today. Now every nut with a cause thinks he or she can look up in the Bible and twist its contradictory meanings and ambiguities to their own needs and desires. As a result, we got pro-lifers gunning down abortion doctors, people saying that Jesus told them to commit acts of atrocities against sinners to punish them, terrorists flying planes into buildings. People are using the Bible to justify denying homosexuals the right to life, liberty, and property as defined by the 14th Amendment of the Constitution simply because they think they have a right to judge them. Doesn't Jesus say something to the effect of, "Judge not, lest ye be judged"? Many members of the religious right are calling for a return to simpler times, and I don't blame them now that anyone can carry on a conversation with their God. All hell is broken loose. And what about those hypocrites who sin 6 days a week and then confess their sins and are absolved to run amok all over again? They pay lip service to their beliefs and then go on and do whatever they want anyway. Now tell me that makes sense. Another decent aspect of most organized religions is the fellowship of human beings in one place. I have been on plenty of church picnics and Methodist corn roasts and found them mostly to be quite fun. I wouldn't wish to trade the experience with family and friends for anything. I have to admit, however, that I've had the same kind of fun at college faculty picnics and gatherings of other groups and organizations without any formal ties to religion. So I suppose it doesn't matter to me. For all their talk of helping the poor and assisting those less fortunate, the churches of the West sure do hoard their money to build impressive altars to God, fund political campaigns, and televise their message of peace to the world. It seems to me that if they sold off all their real estate holdings, melted down all their gold and other metals, cut up their precious jewels and vestments, they'd probably have enough money to feed and house the entire third world for some time to come. I'd be truly impressed with the organized religions of the world if they gave up all their trappings and gave them to the poor. They don't need all that stuff to preach the true word of God. They can do it just as easily in the alleys and public parks as they can from their high and mighty pulpits. I challenge the religions of the world to do just that. Throw off your trappings and finery, convert all your assets and holdings into cash, and feed the world. If you do that, I will proudly endorse you. Of course, the other wonderful thing these days is that if I wanted to, I could create a religion, begin to take in money, and claim non-tax status from the government. What a crock. I think I'll start the Church of Sapient right now, and everyone can give to me so I can sit and speak with God all day. I'll tell you what she's saying when I'm ready. In the meantime, just keep those donations rolling in. Of course, for years we've heard the old separation of church and state argument, a term first coined by a non-Christian deist named Thomas Jefferson. But it seems that the religious right has a very strong political voice in our government. My guess would be that they have found all sorts of inventive ways to fund the chosen people into office to peddle their high and mighty morality. If the religious right had their way, they would turn our nation into a Christians-only theocracy. Everyone would pay tithes in addition to taxes. They'd take away the freedom of speech. They'd remove a woman's right to choose to have an abortion. In some cases, they already are. They'd make it difficult to obtain reliable birth control. They'd attempt to frighten children with inaccuracies about sex, disease, and pregnancy, which they already are doing. They'd take away the right to bear arms because too many sinners would have guns. They'd bring religion into schools and teach it openly. Again, already doing. They'd denounce evolution and return us to a point where nobody challenged creation science. Fear and paranoia would reign supreme. Anyone who didn't toe the line would be suspect and probably ostracized from society. Atheism, paganism, and agnosticism would be deemed illegal. All forms of art, pornography, and free expression would be struck down. You'd be told what you could see on televisions and movies, what you could read, what you could do with your life, and how you would live it. Sounds extremist and downright fascist, doesn't it? Yet these are the things you hear the religious right denouncing and attacking every day. What they really want is control and power over everything we see, hear, do, and think. They pass it off as protecting children or keeping us morally upright or some other nonsense. They actually believe that we already are a Christian nation when in fact we're supposed to be a secular one. The thing they seem to all forget is that this country was founded by secularists. The first six presidents of the United States weren't even Christians. They were deists. One of our most beloved presidents, Abraham Lincoln, didn't believe in the Christian God at all. He merely paid lip service to it because he had to as president. But his private papers and eyewitnesses peg him as an outright atheist. So many famous Americans were non-believers. It's funny that these aspects are simply whitewashed by the so-called moral majority. Today, it is still somewhat dangerous to voice one's non-belief because the old 19th century religious hysteria has been stirred up once again in our country. I think it's time we pulled the curtain down and exposed the wizard behind it. Smoke and mirrors don't hide the fact that organized religion is up to its ears in politics, regardless of any high and mighty speeches about the separation of church and state. Get the fuck out of politics. All organized religion does is add fuel to the fire of an already corrupt and damaged system. Finally, Western religion gives people comfort. In the old days, when caveman Zoc couldn't explain why his buddy Vec got crushed by a falling rock, he decided the god of the falling rocks must have been angry with him. As we evolved, we began to realize that gravity and being in the wrong place at the wrong time had more to do with it than anything else. Every age has had its mysteries, and every age has had its gods and goddesses to control those mysteries. As we became more and more enlightened by science and reason, we found we didn't need that many deities to explain the universe away. So like every civilization which survived, we gradually moved from many gods and polytheism to one god and monotheism. Now when someone we care for dies unexpectedly, it's God's will. When a six-month-old baby chokes on a piece of pretzel and dies in his grandmother's arm, this must be God's will. When a fanatic blows up a federal building, killing over 100 innocent people, this too is God's will. September 11th, God's will. As a matter of fact, if you believe God to be omniscient, omnipotent, omnibenevolent, and immortal, then everything is her will. She already knows how the whole thing is going to go down anyway, so you may as well just let the autopilot run your life. You never have to worry about a thing. She already knows you will either go to heaven or hell, will or will not sin, will or will not marry, have children, live to see grandchildren, or die tomorrow. There's really no reason to live. Oh, don't try to sell me that baloney about the tree of knowledge of good and evil. If eating the apple was all that powerful, then Adam and Eve wouldn't have needed any more instruction. Tell me why this is so. Why is it that eating this apple didn't remove Adam and Eve's need to know more about God and religion? It seems to me that it wasn't all that great after all. At any rate, one of the last great questions of the universe is where we go when we die. Religion lets us believe that our dearly departed loved ones are up there watching us, even now. Perhaps some of them are down there roasting, too. What a tremendous relief it must be to know that when we die, we don't simply cease to exist. We can prance about with our immortal souls and go to heaven like good little children of God. Hogwash. If you bought the whole bit about God being omniscient, omnipresent, omnibenevolent, and immortal, and you believe you have an immortal soul as well, I got a bridge I'd love to sell you. Cash only, small bills. Give it up, folks. Why is it so hard to face that chances are, just as even, when we die, we die. That's it. Game over. No refund, no deposit, no return. Face your mortality and get on with living. You'll be happier. Trust me. In conclusion, I believe that religion is nothing more than superstitious bunk. People choose to believe to gain power and peddle influence, seek comfort from death and cultivate wealth. Some sick individuals use religion as an excuse to do unspeakable horror and cruelty to their fellow man. In the end, religion is simply another human tool or ploy to bilk people of their money and control them. Snake oil salesmen were much more honest than the most religious organizations. I believe that if you live your life as a good person and you try not to hurt anyone and spread love wherever possible, you can do greater good than most organized religions ever manage to accomplish. Use your own mind when you let anyone else do your thinking for you, whether it be religion or something else. You are just acting lazy. This has been a special edition of the Rational Response Squad, our first Irrational Precept show. Look for many more. Visit us at www.rationalresponders.com and check out our sponsors, DoubleDough.com and EvolveFish.com. And don't forget, whatever you do, research our claims, research the claims of others. Don't trust anybody with blind faith. Thank you and good night.